We are recording.
All right. This is the executive committee meeting of March 29, 3 o'clock, 2017. We have only our normal people here, plus Melissa Dansickle. Who is normal, but she was not here before me. I'm so sorry. I'll wake up any minute now. Any modifications to the agenda?
I don't have any.
There's no public, so I don't think there's any public comment. The draft meeting minutes, anybody have anything on that? Okay. Motion approval?
Sorry, you kicked your foot there.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
So those are approved. Okay. Ron, we go directly to you for all of the exhortations about...
Okay.
Do the exhortations first.
Yes, I asked Melissa to join us for this because of the unique nature of this situation with Project Campus. So I just wanted to give you a reminder, and for the record, pursuant to Florida Statute Section 288.075, we've executed a confidentiality agreement with the Project Campus Company, and no information regarding the intentions or interests of the company to locate, relocate, or expand any of its business activities in the state may be disclosed. And I sent you all, under separate cover, the copy of that confidentiality agreement. So in this meeting, it will present some challenges for us on how to have this conversation, but just be very careful not to use the name of the company. You can refer to it as company or campus. And to the extent possible, speak about the broader issues. If there are changes to the agreements that need to be made, those will have to be very specific, but I don't know how else to put that. Okay.
Very delicate.
Yes, it is very delicate. And I've explained the nature of the challenges to the company and what those implications are, and they understand, but obviously, you know, they still would like to keep as much confidential as possible.
Ron, my only other thought is anything to be said with regard to taking notes? Probably be easier if people did not, but I don't know that it matters.
Our board member notes, public record, my understanding is they are not.
They shouldn't be because we've got the agreement.
Right, but to the extent some are taken and we have concern about it, I would ask that they get returned to Ron's records custodian and make sure they're treated confidentially as the rest of the documents are.
Right, that's a much better way to say it. So if you're going to take some notes about what we're talking about, let's give them to Ron. If not, don't take any.
Okay. I've been in other organizations which were under secrecy, and they did require notes to be part of the minutes, part of the record. Mm-hmm. So I think it's up to interpretation.
And that's fine. I think we can do it that way. Mm-hmm. And finally, I think before any conversation happens, Dave has a recusal to make related to Project Campus. Dave, that form in front of you are the details based on what you've conveyed to me. I think it might be appropriate just for you to read that little paragraph.
Yeah.
Because in order to participate in the conversation, you have to declare verbally to the committee what your conflict is. So that is the safest conversation to have and still maintain confidentiality. So if you want to read that to them.
Yeah, I can read that. I'm sure. We're in the paragraph B. Hereby disclosed on March 29th, 2017, measures before my agency and the nature of my conflicting interests in the measures are as follows. Project Campus is an economic development project being considered by the Board of Governors of the Leon County Research and Development Authority, to which I am appointed. The details of the project are confidential pursuant to Section 288.075 Florida Statute. I am retained by the company associated with the project and therefore recuse myself from voting on the matter before the board. I've completed that, and I'll just simply say that's a very minor issue, but it is a consideration for which I sometimes am involved with them, and so therefore I recuse myself. It is my understanding, Counselor, that while I shall not vote, I may still continue to have conversation with regard to this matter.
That's right, and that's one of your two options that are outlined on this form, which is why Ron just had you read that statement into the record so that everyone in the meeting knows that you're participating in the context that you are.
Yeah, okay.
And he only has to do one form, but we have to read that statement at the board meeting too, right?
He'll do another form.
Okay.
It'll say the same thing.
There's a form for each meeting.
That's what it is. Okay.
There's and that
complicating
that form that. Gets incorporated into the minutes of the meeting. Mm-hmm. So, and then also we learned that we're supposed to read that verbally at the meeting following the meeting in which that happens. So we'll have to read. You'll read the one for this meeting and say ditto for the next meeting. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I've not done that before, but that's all right.
Yeah.
Ditto. So the gist of this is that I presented you with two agreements that represent the understanding of the company and how they would like to proceed in this transaction. They have reviewed the documents and agree with the documents as presented to them. My understanding also is that the Office of Economic Vitality, who has their own confidentiality agreement, will be entering into a form of economic development agreement prior to the execution of these documents. I just learned this afternoon. So it's not a done deal. Obviously, the executive committee has to approve it. And then the board would have to approve it, and then they have to come to agreement on this other separate economic development agreement.
Do we know of anything that would be contentious in that agreement?
Not that I'm aware of. I've discussed that there are a couple of phases involved in this project, and this is only phase one. The phase two is not even under consideration at this point. It is not it's not a component of this. Is my understanding. And it's nothing that we're asking the board to approve at this point. Only this phase one portion with these two agreements is all we're asking for.
Have you seen the OEV agreement?
I have not.
And we won't?
We probably will.
Okay.
But we're not a party to it, is my understanding.
Is the city a party to that with the other issues they might be associated with?
I'm not sure.
I haven't seen it yet, so
I don't know exactly.
Okay, because there could be economic development incentives, but there's also other considerations that the city may have to be involved in, so they may do that separate or...
But that might be more associated with phase two.
Right.
Than this particular phase.
Okay. Got it.
So I think the agreement has more to do with any incentives that they might have associated with this phase one and how they go about, because those incentives have to be submitted to DEO, mm-hmm. and they have to be reviewed, and I'm not sure exactly at what stage of approval they have to be at before the contracts can be executed, because it's contingent. You can't get incentives for something you've already agreed to do.
Right. And I think City County Commission have to approve QTI contribution. I'm not sure how we're handling this with OEV right now, but this was one of the questions that I always had, that we have to approve funding for QTI, but I think before submitting that application to the state, or there's some, or maybe afterwards, I don't know. Do you remember
that?
It may need a couple of steps through county and city commission meetings.
So, right. Yes. So we will have to, get way through that piece after our board approves, the final version of this. I'm hopeful that it won't require any further board action as far as the economic development agreement, but it might be wise to empower Ann to execute any one of those agreements if we are a party to it. And my guess is, if anything, if we are a party to it, it will only be to the extent that it mentions these other pieces and perhaps makes that a requirement of performance in order to get these other incentives. I think that's be the extent of it.
Do you see that happening before the board meeting? Do you need that authority now from us? Or from
it won't have. I don't.
I don't know.
They're working on the agreement now. But
I doubt it'll be interesting.
The reason I don't think it's going to be done is because of the QTI application.
Yeah.
I think I'll have to get through that process. But if it doesn't happen by the board, then the board can do that.
It just seems like the board should delegate that authority versus just the executive committee. That was really
yes. Funny. No. Yeah, yes. Yeah, I suggested okay, the board would do
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. That I thought. Yeah. That was the only question.
Remind me again what QTI stands for. I can't ever.
Qualified targeted industries.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. That's the one that pays you back for the number of employees you get, or give it an incentive based on when you meet your targets for adding employees. So it's not a lump sum up front. And we were going through this the other day. I think it's 25% county, 25% city, 50% state contribution to that.
There has been a OEB did a preliminary economic impact based on the use of their software, and it's very preliminary, but FSU CIFA is doing the actual economic impact. But the preliminary estimate is about $70 million in total impact just on this phase one. So, are there any broad questions that we need to address at this point? For example,
such a challenge.
Yeah.
If I can just give you an example of a broad question, it might be is
that would be good.
Should the authority be giving away property versus selling it or receiving some other form of compensation for the leasing of that property or any property, any future property?
And that brings to the point of how little property we have left that would be capable of being disposed of.
Yes. And that obviously raises the question of what we're getting out of it if we're giving it away. I mean, you're not just giving it away. You're giving it away for a reason.
And the only thing I will say is, in you know, my instinct is you don't give things away, you sell it. But also, just to bring up our mission, and the economic development mission, portion of our mission is to create jobs. And sometimes you have to pay to create jobs. Now, this is the broader conversation that's going on in the State House, which is, you know, are we given things to, is it corporate welfare or whatever other terms I want to use?
What is the nature of our ownership? I know that we own this in fee, correct?
The lot that is being added to the lease is state lease land, okay? We've never paid for that. We never bought that land.
Yep. Oh, that's right. That's right. Okay.
We're not talking about that piece.
This is not our piece of property.
No.
It's the state's piece of property.
Now, we did just pay $100,000 to reacquire the leasehold interest about, what, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago?
Because people do pay us for property.
They have.
Or have at times, yes.
FSU typically pays us for property.
Right.
Except for the exchange that we did in the restructuring.
I'm sorry, back up a minute.
So we
acquire the leasehold interest.
We reacquired that leasehold interest about 2 years ago for $100,000.
From a prior tenant.
From the prior tenant.
Right. Okay, all right.
And now keep in mind that we also had previously sold the leasehold interest in that property. So net, we actually made money on the deal on that one. We sold it for $65,000 an acre and bought it back for about $47,000 an acre.
Okay.
So it is not like we are out of pocket,
right?
On that, we've never. I mean, when we did the original lease with the state, we didn't have to pay anything for it.
Well, what is customary if in similar circumstances around the state, if there are similar circumstances around the state for this type of thing, is it expected that the entity such as SCRDA get no compensation? And I guess the question is, if so, why? And is there alternate forms of compensation that could be used to, that could be potentially spaced out over time to make it more palatable?
I will tell you from for example, I visited the Treasure Coast Research Park down in St. Lucia.
In Treasure Coast?
Yes, Fort Pierce. And they are structured exactly the same way as we are. They have a lot more ground, but they do have list prices on their property. It's actually a much more expensive property, but it's mainly because of the location.
If something like this were to come up there, would they be expecting compensation? Or
I think the general answer is yes, but I will tell you, every park is different. The value of the real estate is different. The demand for the real estate is different. There's not a huge demand here, and their per acre cost is probably double, at least double what we've got per acre. So it's a supply and demand question, and right now we don't have a lot of demand in our, you know, when you consider, you know, $50,000 an acre, that's not a lot compared to other types of property in the city even.
And what kind of term are we referring to here?
The lease, this would be an amendment to an existing lease, and it would continue through 2074, runs the full length of our
lease.
That's our lease with the state. Mm-hmm. And that lease has a clause in it that provides, if I recall, provides for a good faith negotiation of a new lease at that point in time. But,
yeah.
Then the other part of that, though, is if no lease is done and no new lease happens, then the property that's built is then the property of the state.
Mm-hmm. And you have a clause in that amendment, though, that does include a milestone for them to reach before the lease expires.
Yes. So if they don't do what they say they're going to do, then in 5 years, then they have to pay us $125,000. Mm-hmm. Which is similar to the previous deal that we've done. So, to answer your question, I think people do whatever they need to do in the circumstances and whatever their priorities are at the time. Our priorities in the past has not really been the attraction of private sector companies. But we know going forward it's going to be a higher priority to fill the rest of at least the LCRDA space with private sector companies. So, I'm not advocating for one thing or the other. I'm just saying.
But if this were, instead of public sector property, private sector property, there certainly would be a land lease that would be paying out something every year, so on and so forth. That's the thing I'm having a problem with, mm-hmm. trying to understand the justification for the difference. And the only thing, of course, I'm saying is that there are going to be a significant amount of jobs that are created, and the payback will be through that. And if that's enough, I mean, to make the state happy and so forth, then I suppose I can understand it. But it would be good for LCRDA's benefit to if they get something. And I just mentioned, should I mention what we discussed? I was searching for alternate means to get something. To, in a sense, sweeten the pot, make LCRDA want to do this. And what struck me was that this is happening at the same time as we're trying to get the incubator going, that it would be possible, it would be reasonable, since we're dealing with a private company, and I would imagine this would be a tax-deductible gift that they could make in order to help move that project along. You know, I don't know what the reaction to something like that would be. At least be something tangible that LCRDA would get that would also generally benefit everybody and make this happen at least incrementally faster than it otherwise would.
And I think what the way we conceive of this would be some sort of sponsorship agreement, and it could be for the incubator, it could be for the EEP program. I think it would be a matter of presenting it to the company and saying, here's a chance, and we can address the tax deductibility issue in a minute because that's actually on our agenda for the jumpstart piece. But they may find it desirable. The company has, in the past year or more, has expressed a desire to be more visible and active in the community. And I think this gives them a means to do it while still effectively receiving that property for no cost, which I think helps them probably in the grander scheme of things with their parent company.
That's a great idea, Eric. Yeah, I think that So my only other concern, as I've thought about it, is the term, is the length of time.
On the lease?
On the lease.
Mm-hmm. On the lease or the term to build out their...
The right of first refusal.
The right of first refusal.
The five-year term. That's a five-year term on that. There are two pieces, the lease yes. and the right of first refusal.
Okay.
The right of first refusal is on property that we own.
Right.
And it's for 5 years. Now, I can speak more specifically about the terms of that agreement, I think, without having a problem, because there are some things in there that I think need to be clear that the lease portion you're okay with as far as the... It's because it runs concurrently with the original lease.
Yeah, as long as there isn't anybody sitting around this table who thinks that if we did something improvident, you know, it lasts for a long time. That's a long time.
So could I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's all I had to say.
If I can make a comment about the land incentive and that stuff on the portion that the state owns before we talk about...
Yeah, I didn't mean to.
Is that okay?
Yes.
So, the lease terms there, other things don't bother me. I mean, that's what we have on a lot of the buildings out here. It's just an unusual, it's an odd situation to have that long of a lease with the state and everything else, right? I think we've got our hands on it better than the authority has in the past. You know, we have in the last 6 years, but it is unique. So two thoughts stand out to me on this. One, that this is a bit of a legacy. I think that's already been put out there, so there is some precedent here. I too am concerned about setting a future precedent, just this is how it always is. I think that the remaining property, we probably have two options. One, attracting a for-profit, I mean, this is just generally for authority, or what, and Denise and I just had a great meeting for an hour and a half, and we were talking about this piece of it, or what other research parks did in the early 80s that we didn't do, which was build a spec building to house their second stage companies and attract more companies. So they own the building, but they get a lot more lease revenue off of it from private sector companies than we did with the agreements we had with FSU on the first number of buildings we had. If we start showing that we're using our other property in a different way, I think we indicate to others that this is not the status quo, that this is a unique situation. But on the other hand, to your point about incentives, there's a lot of incentives that are land based. Counties and cities, you know, we're talking about this out by the airport. You do a shovel-ready site, and you put in all the utilities infrastructure. That is a land incentive. That's covering some costs. You waive development fees. You waive other things. You might do what was done for some companies, you know, in the past and help them with the land. So whether it's within a research park or other public entity, I don't think that's unprecedented. But everybody works with what they've got, so it doesn't look one-to-one. So that part doesn't give me heartburn. I had more questions on the other part, but that's just my two cents on that.
Sounds good to me.
I want to go for the record in knowing what your thought is on the market value of that piece, that parcel A or whatever.
I think the 125 is close to market.
Excuse me, parcel B.
On the...
lease part.
The lease portion?
Yeah.
Yes. We paid $100,000 for it.
Yes.
A couple of years ago. There was another appraisal done on a property across the street a few months later, and it was slightly higher. So I chose the $125,000 number because I thought it represented an escalating market that we're in. It's still within the, you know, kind of in the range. I mean, short of going and doing an appraisal.
This is the best indication, the only indication.
Yes.
Of value. Yeah.
So I think, and I went up, you know, and as I said, they've reviewed the documents, and that does not give them heartburn. Now again, I'm sure they fully expect to actually execute on the deal and never have to pay that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I do think that if we do talk about this potential sponsorship agreement, I think that number would be useful to say
we as a benchmark.
That we would like to do a sponsorship agreement that perhaps is either some upfront money or maybe something over 5 years. You know, maybe it's $25,000 a year for 5 years, and you get this. You get this level of exposure, or we'll work with your faith to do, you know, this, that sort of thing.
So if it was that amount, there really isn't any... If it was that amount and they didn't meet their commitment, that would pose a question for me, because they might be paying double. After that,
we're not saying that
you're not saying it's a one-to-one.
No.
Yeah. Because
again, if they fully expect to
meet the commitment, then that's
yeah. And that could be a bone of contention, certainly.
Yeah. Well, but you wouldn't have to tie them together at all.
I wouldn't.
Yeah. It would just be, in our minds, this is
Well, then we could have that reduced by each annual payment. I understand what you're saying.
Well, I think...
I'd rather have both.
because they could... One of the issues we'll get into the tax deductibility of it. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to give them tax advice. But whether or not, you know, the IRS would look at this as a form of compensation in lieu of, you know, a lease payment, and just characterize the sponsorship agreement as a lease payment, you could run into that. They could run into that. And they're a sophisticated company, so they'll have sophisticated tax folks who can answer that question. So, which is, again, a reason why I'm not going to push real hard on the tax deductibility piece of it, because it may or may not be deductible. But I think that's a reasonable approach to take on that, on the whole deal is just to say, you know, in lieu of any form of compensation, we want to encourage your continued growth in the community and your perception, and we're going to help you, and you're going to help us in the process. So.
Well, I like Eric's idea, and I think he's put on the table a good place for us to really begin to hone in on a discussion and decision. I applaud his thought process on that.
Yep, same here. Kristen?
I feel like I need to say this, although Dave might be the only one who remembers me saying it 5 years ago or so, 6 years ago now. There was a similar intent in a request made of Sunnyland Solar when they went in, but very different form. They escrowed $100,000 to be used for programs out here.
Did not know that.
Yes, and we have used a portion of that for the wet lab feasibility study, and
EEP.
And another portion for EEP.
So now I remember that, but I didn't know that was how it got
there. That's how it got here.
Remember how?
Yes, and that was. It was a situation where there were no other opportunities, you know, of land. They had to go here, and I was very uncomfortable with how that happened. So since I'm on the record in the past having had a lot of concerns with that, it was the way the deal was done and the open-endedness about what that $100,000 was going to be for that I really had some heartburn about. I like it better if it is within a more structured agreement and it is mutually beneficial. I don't think that other one was necessarily mutually beneficial. It was at the discretion of the board, period. We never had to mention Sunnyland again or anything like that.
And Sunnyland pays lease payments.
And they pay lease payments. They do, yes. So it was both on that. So I just wanted to say that because I had argued against that in the past and I've always been uncomfortable with it, this sounds like it addresses some of those concerns I had in the past. I still have some sensitivity to maybe a higher amount, things like that. And maybe I'm just a little more comfortable with using land as an economic incentive than, I mean, I would understand if others were not as comfortable with that. To me, it's public land, whether it's the state, it's us, it's, you know, and it's, we're, if everything happens the way they say it's going to, there's going to be a good return on that investment. But I do like this idea. I just wanted to put that out there, and we don't need to negotiate on the record here or anything, so I'm comfortable with Ann, you and Ron working on this, but I just felt like saying that because there were, I had a lot of issues with how the last one looked. So long as this looks very different, I think I'd be okay.
Yes, I agree 100% with that portion of that we could structure something that's mutually beneficial. That would be the objective.
Good, yeah.
Because they frankly don't have to do it here.
No, it is
competitive. There are other places in the mix.
So, outside of this community.
Yes.
Outside of the community.
Yeah. No, it's a very different situation all around. It just, consistency, wanted to mention it.
And I would just say that we could broach the subject with the company, tell them here's what we're thinking, get their feedback, and see what they say. And if they say no way, then I've got until next Thursday to get an answer and bring that back to the board, and the board can decide at that point, you know, what do they want to do. Mm-hmm.
Do you need a vote on this today?
I don't know if you want to
move forward.
Do you want to continue the conversation about the other piece?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, you want to talk about the other piece?
Go ahead and talk yourself, what do you want?
Well,
they actually kind of go together.
I think go ahead and talk about the rest of it.
So,
you need to jump ahead.
Sure. I'm backwards.
Have a better chair.
Some of them really do go back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So, what did you have some specific concerns, or are you gonna?
Nope.
The one thing I want to point out is, and this was my concern, was the with this right of first refusal, locking up this property and not being able to do anything for 5 years.
That's the concern. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, wait a minute now.
Well, and that's what I'm going
to
clarify.
About to explain.
Okay. I'm going to explain this.
Because I asked, that was my biggest concern as well. But,
okay.
Yeah.
So, first of all, this is not an option. Okay. It's a right of first refusal. So, in order for them to exercise this, someone would have to come to us and make an offer on the property.
Yeah.
Okay. And they would then be able to match that offer. And it spells out in the agreement some very specifics about how they go about doing that. One of the things that we added to this agreement that helps us a lot is this, there's some language that says, holder shall have no other rights to the property than is set forth herein. LCRDA shall retain all rights in and to the property, including but not limited to the right to develop, restrict, maintain, or improve the property, including for its own use. Okay, so the only thing that triggers the exercise of this is someone coming to us with an offer.
Third party, right.
Okay, if we decided to do something, for example, one of the conversations has been about moving that parcel into the park. Mm-hmm. So it's covered under the PUD and our covenants and restrictions, which also would allow us to collect CAM fees on mm-hmm. that. So this would still allow us to do that. The other part, obviously, is to still have the rights to develop. So we could still develop our own building and lease, you know, and lease space. I don't know if we got into a situation where we're leasing ground. I think that would be a problem. But if we developed it ourselves, mm-hmm. then we should be able to lease it.
Okay, that was, I'm sorry, different than what I understood when we were briefing the other day. If it was a ground lease, it would be a problem for someone else to build?
I think the ground tenant would take subject to this right of first refusal if the property were ever to be sold. And I think if we think that's a possibility, we should probably clarify in here what would happen in the event of a crisis.
Well, would anybody even want to put a building on there?
Right.
And move, there was the option to purchase.
Right, and I don't know if
I think
we,
it scares anybody away.
Yeah. I think we've always talked about one of the benefits of that property is that we can sell it, that we can't sell any of the other property. So I think we've always kind of talked about the two options, either we develop a building that we manage and lease, or someone purchases a portion of it. And that was the question I had for you, and that through an RFP, if we put an RFP out to do a certain type of development there, got responses, that is not someone coming to us and they get right of first refusal. That would be...
I mean, if the RFP says we propose to buy the property, if they're proposing to buy the property from us, then yes, that would trigger that.
Okay, well, I guess that's what I meant by the question. If we put an RFP out and said, we want to have housing up here, and you can buy the property, you can lease the property, this is the scope of what we want, and we get responses on that. I don't know if that's how we would go into a development, but if we ever did something like that, sought a developer to do something, whether they lease or purchased it from us, I thought that was us initiating someone and seeking someone, therefore it wouldn't trigger this.
It would still trigger this.
Okay, then I misunderstood.
Yeah. I think the mechanism by which you receive an offer, whether it's the organization going out and soliciting it or someone just walking up and putting a contract on the desk, I don't think that matters. It's the intent to sell the property that would trigger this. And I think your comment is probably correct, which is that it may be a deterrent for buyers, and one outcome could be that you don't get an offer, or another outcome could be that the offer you get is a reduced market value because of the risk associated.
And that is absolutely the problems with these types of agreements. They do impair the value of the property for 5 years in this case.
Do they really need 5 years? I mean, couldn't they come to a decision in 3?
I'm guessing they probably need 5 years for that more than they need 5 years for the other.
Yeah.
That's my guess on that.
Well, it'd be worth a conversation to find out what's the magic, what is magic about 5 years?
Okay.
Is there a value at which this organization would sell it today that was a reduced value from market, but that would allow them to have it and own it?
I don't think they would do that unless they were selected by...
I think they are looking at a future use of that property, and that future use isn't determined yet.
Mm-hmm. I remember, are they paying something for this right of first refusal?
No.
They've not offered anything.
Well, they can add a little bit more to the pot for the incubator.
Yeah. See, I think there's a value to us for that right of first refusal being put down, because it takes it off the market for 5 years. Mm-hmm. Technically. I mean, you say it doesn't, and somebody could come in, but as we've also
practically
discussed,
yes,
maybe, it lowers the value of it.
Not as to us, but as to somebody else, yeah.
Yes, it lowers the value of it. So it takes the present value away from us for 5 years. So is there then appropriate decision, that we would say there's value there that we should be compensated for?
Yeah, and I'll just tell you that the mindset is, again, if we start talking about value, is we're putting X dollars into this project, we're bringing X jobs, and this is an incentive. You are giving us this incentive. This is what we're asking for, mm-hmm. is the incentive.
It's pretty straightforward.
Right. This is not a market value deal. These are incentives we're asking for. Okay. And that's why the negotiation is different with what Eric is proposing with the sponsorship agreement. I'm not getting into, you know, is this a market value thing?
Well, incentives work both ways, though.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe there's a number that would be not market-based, but feel-good-based, that shows that everyone is, you know, on the same page. And really, it's not like the money that LCRDA would get is not going to be put to a good use. It'll be a very good use, and it could benefit them and many other people.
Yeah.
Along the way. So it's all part of the equation.
And that's why I like the sponsorship agreement, because it does have a better feel-good to it.
Yeah.
But we're back to talking about the first part, not this part.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's nothing that says we can't receive compensation under sponsor. Well, the sponsorship agreement value couldn't be increased to allow for the fact that we're not receiving anything on the right of first refusal.
I have a bigger issue than that, though. We are, I think, at a tipping point on a conversation about that. I mean, I've been eager to have the conversation about that 12 acres for years. I mean, I think we are almost at the point where we can do that. And there is some private sector interest in housing or other things like that that has made me think the time is approaching that we want to consider our options there.
Well, what Ron and I have had the same conversation in which I'm going to get this out there. This is not my strong suit, you know. So I am very much relying on Ron and the rest of you. But what I do see is this is a critical decision. This is a very critical decision. So it kind of gives me the willies a little bit, because if we're locking ourselves in, it's a very important decision. So.
How much space is needed to do what you're talking about versus what they're talking about, and can that all be accomplished in 12 acres?
Eric, you just went to the next thing.
Sure.
I was going to ask was whether was 6 acres, was half the property just kind of draw a dividing line, or do they know they need 6 acres, or could they?
Basically, they had some other property that they said this would be equivalent to in terms of what they would put on.
Okay.
And they, so actually they wanted 12. I got them to 6.
Right. Okay.
Say the first part of that sentence again.
They have another property and they are looking to build something very similar in terms of size. And this would be even a tight fit for that at 6 acres.
How big is 1E? I just want to judge this.
2.4.
Yeah, that's what, okay.
So
Avalanche is probably about 2 acres.
I forget. It's actually, I think, maybe a little bit bigger.
Okay. I'm trying to answer. I'm trying to think about your question.
Some of it, I think, would depend on the portion of the property, right? I mean, we can't assume that every acre is equally usable based on the condition of the property, the physical condition of the property. If there's wetland area.
I think that property
actually,
that property is very usable.
Okay. This is the most buildable piece of property we have. Now, the natural features inventory and other things haven't been updated in a long time, but that's what we've been told. Not wetlands, nothing else like that. Now, my mind goes to places that we probably don't want to talk about right now, but if we developed the lower 6 acres, for example, we have the ability, whether it's in the PUD or not, to convey stormwater down to our western basin pond, for example. We don't want to give up that capacity to somebody else. They're going to have to maintain their stormwater on their property. There's a lot of other issues with this that could get even more complicated, mm-hmm. I think the lower 6 acres is more beneficial to us if we're going to give up anything. Mm-hmm. But the reason why I asked you the question about the RFP the other day was that if we determine that there is a demand for housing and we need more space for housing and there's a private sector interest in housing and we put out a request for that, this is kind of where I was getting to, that they could not meet that demand. Their right of first refusal is to do what they want to do, and it's something different than housing. So we are giving up those opportunities. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we could build a building on an acre or 2 acres with parking and a small-scale housing. We still have the extended stay conversation out there. These are the types of things that have always been on my mind.
Are these three parcels ours? Just a quick question.
No.
FAMU.
They're not ours. FAMU's.
The stuff in orange is FAMU.
All right, that's what I call it.
But don't
I mean, don't also lose sight of the fact that we have an opportunity for having the company add a lot of jobs.
That's a massive opportunity.
And perhaps needs some additional extended stay opportunities or capacity. I'm just trying to think about how big of a footprint, like the residence in down there by the
not very big.
Yeah, it's not a very big footprint.
Mm-hmm. It depends on what we want. We've taken out height restrictions. We have reduced or will setbacks and those types of things. All of that limits the amount of property that you can build on. We're making all this better. If we convey our stormwater down, we have more buildable property. I think we could do a lot of interesting things with 6 acres.
Well, none of that's subject to the covenants currently anyway.
It's not. But, I mean, if it was taken in, whatever. That, good point, though. It's not subject to it right now, but we would have to go into a development agreement or else extend it. So, I think we could do a lot with 6 acres, but it certainly changes some of the dynamics and some of our options.
All of which, to me, just argues in favor of being as, I guess I would say, restrictive as we can be while not discouraging them. In terms of how this second thing might happen. Because bottom line for me is this is potentially a really big deal for many reasons, not the least of which is to further anchor the folk that are already,
And if they in fact exercise that right of first refusal, it's because they're going to build something and bring a lot of jobs.
And let's flip that to our potential for the other 6 acres. Say we build a building that we've talked about at different times where there's more food service and other things on the first floor. If they meet both commitments, that huge increase in users for those. I mean, this is so beneficial to us.
It changes the dynamic of the park where you have now, currently you have, everything is on that side of the park. Now.
Well, it makes everything we're talking about doing more feasible.
Yeah. And we still have all the leased ground. We're still probably going to get Sunny Land back in a year and a half?
It was a year, August of
2018.
Yes. That's it.
So, that's still, now granted, it's leased land, and that changes some things, but...
But we could do a lot on that leased land.
Yep.
And FAMU may not build out all of their acreage quickly, and, there may be some opportunities there.
Yep.
Ron, one of your initial comments was that you had an update from OEB earlier, and it sounded like the timing was more imminent. To sign a development agreement incentive agreement?
That's incentive.
Does that help ease the concern any about the right of first refusal burden?
No, I don't think so, because that's not going to include any of the future stuff, the phase two stuff.
Right, the phase two stuff is only in agreement with us right now. Everything else is just phase one, right, that OED is working on?
Yep.
I bet they go back and talk to them about phase two should that happen.
Upon execution of the right of first refusal, mm-hmm. I think is when they would go to do phase two.
Do they have a timeline for considering phase two?
No, they have not communicated that. But I will certainly bring that up when we talk about the magic of 5 years.
Could the property that this building is sitting on be used for housing, multi-story, and have administrative and or retail, grocery, restaurant, whatever on it? And the property just to the south of it, maybe use it for some parking or something, but could this site accommodate it? We removed this
building? Well, to the south is actually in an easement. But the this property, I think the only issue are the trees.
Trees in the wetland make this property a lot tighter. Plain.
The floodplain runs all the way up to the back of the deck.
But you can always raise that.
Yeah. My little brainstorming about it has always been that this building could go away at some point higher and better use for this area. And we could put our administrative building in a different, like, a different
place
building.
Or
yeah.
On the third floor of that building or something.
Right, right. So, yeah, there are opportunities.
What's the size of this?
2,800 square feet.
The acreage.
Yeah. About. The oak trees were the big constraint on this one.
Three acres.
Yeah. You have to get creative or pay a hefty fee and replace a lot of trees.
So what I hear at this point is try to reduce the number of years, go for the sponsorship agreement
on
the right of first refusal. We can't change the lease terms. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Because it would impact the original lease, and they're not going
to
do that.
How much time do they have to execute on the parcel in which they want to lease?
How much time do they have?
After the board approves, is there a period of time in which they have then to execute documents?
No, we're just going to have to wait on OEV to get the actual economic development agreement done.
Okay, and you are of the opinion that that would happen pretty quickly thereafter?
I think so.
So wait, let me understand this. We execute these documents next week, right?
No, we execute them after OEV gets their economic development agreement done. Okay. It may or may not happen in a week.
All right, that's what...
The board approves it next week, so it's ready to be executed.
Yes, yes.
It's drafted and ready to sign.
It's ready to go as soon as they meet whatever requirements DEO has to make sure that they qualify for QTI. Mm-hmm.
And our agreement, I'm going to assume, would add... as emphasis for them to move on with their agreement.
I think like the threshold question is, are these agreements contingent on the OEV funding?
Well, that's what we're getting.
Yeah.
Well, we're not going to execute them yet until all of those other pieces are in place.
Well, then when we present it to the board, we have to make sure that the agenda item says contingent on.
If that's what the board votes to do, right?
Yes.
But a couple of days ago, we thought that other piece was waiting and that we would move forward with this first. I think having our board's approval, I mean, this is a critical piece, is the land. So I think this backs up their next steps to complete those other agreements, even if we don't execute until those agreements are done. So
I think that's what I was trying to say.
Yeah, I think our board approval is still, should that happen.
Adds value to the whole.
Very, yes, that is very helpful to them in moving to the next steps. I have one other thought about the 6 acres. Mm-hmm. If 5 years is critical to them, I wonder if there may be a way to split it and say absolute right of first refusal as articulated for first 3 years, and then is there some watered down version of that right of first refusal in the 2 years after that where they still get some rights, but maybe not, maybe it gives us a little more flexibility. That may be way, way, way too complicated, but if they, it, I just wonder if there's some way to phase that a little bit, but...
I guess you either have the right or you don't.
Okay. I just had to ask the question.
I guess you could narrow the things that would trigger their right and expand what SCRDA can do that would not trigger that right.
That's what...
Or you could, you know, if you're talking about capturing some kind of financial compensation for the right... Maybe it's free for so many years, and then they pay a fee every time they want to extend it. Or
that kind of stepping to 5 years
gives them some incentive to do something.
Yeah,
we could be fine with say 3 or something like that, but after the next 2 years,
they have to pay to renew.
Yeah,
they pay up front for the annual fee to renew. Or
Ron, is that something you can work with?
Yes.
Okay.
Does anyone have a dollar amount?
I'm fine with you guys.
$1.50.
I have no idea. I don't have any experience with.
Maybe Telcor could help.
Yeah.
Melissa, do you have any idea?
No. I mean, I've seen options, and I know an option's different than our right of first refusal, but I've seen options granted for $5,000. I've seen them granted for $100,000. I don't know how you're going to put a dollar on that.
Yeah.
I think it's what is it? you know, what's it worth to LCRDA to take it off the market? It's just hard to put a dollar on it today for 3 years from now.
Right, I don't think we can set the what the value might be or anything like that. Yeah.
And I actually don't, I would look at it less that way than I do. I think it's good to have markers in the agreement that push them to know that it would be to your advantage to get moving on this if you're going to do it.
So it doesn't have to be a high value.
But
so if they were willing to go 3 years with no added fee, then after 3 years, if they don't reduce it, then we're going to say, okay, we'll do two more, but you got to pay for that at that point in time if you haven't exercised it by then. Or if we,
10?
Or 15,000 or some number. 10,000, I don't know.
We were all thinking around the same place then. Yeah.
What are you saying?
But I'd say 10 per year instead of for both years.
10,000 per year?
Yeah.
And we could make a commitment that goes to entrepreneurial programs to match other. I mean, I think that could we could make a commitment that that's not just general funds for us, that goes to entrepreneurial programs or something if that makes them feel better. Or it goes to general funds. Ron wants it to general funds.
That too, but at this point, it doesn't make any difference.
Right.
I'm trying to think in terms of how they're going to characterize it. I don't think.
I see. Okay. Yeah. I'm thinking they
want the sponsorship.
Yeah.
Well, we're still
doing that's something separate on the other.
Another way you could expand your control would be defining the acreage. So it sounds like everyone is in agreement that the northern six acres would be the best to grant to them, but you might not feel that way in 3 years for whatever reason.
If the line is sort of drawn there where the break is, we're probably only talking about 5 acres.
That was just an approximation. Mm-hmm. What they really want is the land that's contiguous to the land next to it.
Right.
Okay. And
so a vertical line instead of a horizontal line?
No, a horizontal line.
I think...
Can you make a little...
Well, I still think that's going to be closer to 5 acres.
The agreement says 6 acres. And it says the northernmost 6 acres.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
Which I... Yeah. I just ballpark, here.
Yeah.
Well, if the whole thing is 11.9.
Mm-hmm. I have different things. Some say 12.05, whatever. So, but regardless, what I showed you, Dave, was unofficial.
Yeah.
Okay? What I showed you all in the briefings was just an approximation. Okay? The actual documents do not have that line in it.
Yeah.
It just says the northern 6 acres. Northernmost 6 acres. Okay? So that's without doing a survey, that's the best I could come up with. Okay, so just so you know, they want something up here that's equivalent to 6 acres.
I think that's going to bring that down below the horizontal line.
Yeah, it's not a problem. You're talking about this line?
Yeah.
That's fine.
I think it's going to only leave you with 5 acres a little better.
No, it's the total is 12 acres.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But you see the bottom part is wider than the top part. So if you take 6 of the 12, you're going to get some of that below that horizontal line.
It might be an angled line, if it's on Roberts. Yeah.
Sort of diagonal or something like that.
Does that matter?
I'm just wanting to make sure I can preserve a decent piece in there for somebody else.
Well, okay, so Dave's point here. The depth... Let's talk about that. Let's get an actual plat. Or you've got the...
We just have this. This is just...
It doesn't show.
The only way we're going to know with certainty is if you had a surveyor go out, and then that's just going to be an additional expense, I'm afraid.
If the depth here from...
And time.
Yeah, from south to north, from the park property line north, is about 2 acres to the CCYS property, right where that little cutout is.
Yeah, this piece is 2.44.
Right. So I think if the southern piece that we would keep is approximately 2 acres, around about 2 acres on the depth, that's probably good for developing a building because in depth. We wouldn't want a half acre.
Strip.
Yeah, we wouldn't want a long skinny strip that was a half acre. That would be incredibly challenging. So we want about 2 acres in. Yeah, but I think that's probably going to do it.
If they would calculate the 6 acres by keeping that one corner, funny corner point fixed, and then deciding where to draw the line back from there to divide it,
keep
that fixed.
If they had to go this way?
Perhaps, or probably not that big of an angle. But
I think it would be that big of an angle, because if you say it's 12 and they want 6, it's going to cut into this bottom piece.
Well, so Dave, let's assume that you're correct. What would that do to your feel about the whole thing? Do you think it is approaching the less usable?
Well, I again think what they want is 5 acres, not 6. I think they want to cut off where you say the bottom part of their southern boundary would be on the west side. I think they want to go sort of straight across from there.
Well, they asked specifically for 6.
Yeah.
That's what they...
They asked for 12.
They said 12, yeah. And I said 6.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we will find that out. Yeah. My concern is just the broader... Does that... That gives up all the frontage. The road frontage. Maybe that's good.
The road frontage.
I think it is... I would make the strong argument, if we were going to choose one or the other,
yeah,
we don't want to bifurcate our property from the park.
Right.
Right? So the bottom half gives us stormwater capacity, a road entry point into this area, because it cuts off, you know, can come from Van Ness and from our acreage within the park, whether it's in the PUD or not.
Mm-hmm.
If it were put in the PUD, then the property lines go away, and we can reconfigure these things. So there's a whole lot more opportunities, regardless of an angled line or whatever. We're not going to know that, Melissa's right, until we get a survey. To me, the opportunities for redevelopment shrink extremely if we go for the northern portion versus the southern portion.
I agree with you.
So if we're going to have one or the other, that's...
Or, and then the other option is,
yeah,
you do that, and now you got this funny-shaped...
No, I do.
Yeah. No, I like north and south better, too, because it allows us, I mean, what are we after here? A campus feel.
Yep.
It allows us to open that whole portion up by virtual campus, everything else. Yeah.
But if you are in a position to say, we're willing to do this 5-year or 3-year, whatever, right, a refusal, you could decide, this speaks, obviously, that's one point. But you can decide where on this area here...
That's the critical point.
...that you want to do it. And and I don't know, if there's maybe a logical one, we would need to decide what makes the most sense for us. And wherever that is, we pick that point and say, north of that, we're happy. And if that's 5.7 acres, it's 5.7 acres. If it's 6, it's 6, whatever it is.
So you pick the point at the lot,
whatever you felt
that is adjacent to the southwest corner of lot 1E.
That does not make
somewhere there's going to be
adverse conditions on the southern part of that.
Well, somewhere there's going to be a pin in here somewhere already, I bet.
Well, I mean, we have the survey, so yeah. We have the survey from the lot next to it. So what I'm saying is, we would describe that point as the southwest corner. The point adjacent to the southwest corner of lot 1E, that would be the fixed southern boundary that would extend to the
whatever
that other corner is.
Yeah, are you making a face, Melissa?
She's trying to figure out how to write that.
Yeah. So you take this property line here,
yep,
to where that pin would be in the ground,
yep,
and then go west.
Yeah, and we know that. We know those points.
Then if we know those points, I'm satisfied. I just don't want to get this thing like this or much like that.
Okay.
I want to preserve this as a really nice parcel.
I think Ron's got to have some flexibility in the conversations, Ron and Ann.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I agree about the depth, everything like that. But my sense right now would be to say, you've got our concerns, and Dave's, yeah. So I don't want to set a specific number, 5.7, right, or something like that, right, until we see a survey.
Yeah.
Just kind of.
He's just saying in the right of first refusal, put that point.
Yes.
Yeah.
And take out the language 6 acres.
Right.
Right. We would need a specific area because we need that to know what our area is that's unencumbered, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, we need to know where we're drawing that line, what they have right of first refusal to, what they don't.
I mean, when we do that, we're going to have to go get a survey.
Right, right.
Okay, so we're trying to get this done without having the time and expense to go get a survey.
Well, I think if you take the existing surveys, you can real easily put into computer and compute what that acreage is.
If they were in computer in the first place, they're so old, Dave. Yeah. What if we put a caveat?
I'd have to hire a surveyor to go get to take the data and do the calculation.
You don't think we can get it off of existing surveys?
I don't think so. Mm-mm. We looked in my office even to try to sort through the stuff that Ron sent over to come up with something better. I think we would need a survey.
They were too old.
That parcel has gone through some changes as a result of selling off that upper left-hand corner.
Yeah.
They sold off in two parcels.
Did we own it and we sell it off?
One of the pieces we owned at one point, the other piece got sold before we got that parcel. So,
could there be a caveat in there that a survey will be done to determine the exact boundary at point, you know, at some point in the future, so that we know?
Sometimes this gets added to real estate documents where the parties attach a sketch, which is what we've essentially done, mm-hmm. and said that a survey will be forthcoming, and then at the time that that's been produced, that will be substituted in as the exhibit.
Mm-hmm.
So if you wanted to add that as a term to this so that this could get signed quickly, you could, and then you could identify who the party is that's responsible for.
And what does our sketch look like again? It doesn't show
it's the
point
entire
or line or an
image. It's just the entire parcel outline.
I think I would feel comfortable with a caveat that a survey would replace it at some point in the future. Just because if we were to market some of the property, we would need to know where that property line was.
Right.
So even if we commit to 6 acres or something, I think including a a more exact survey at whatever time we determine that we want to do that.
I think the 6 acre thing worries me, saying that in language, because that would imply that whatever it is, they're going to get 6 acres.
Well,
I'd really think if we could put into language from this pen to that pen is what they're what we're looking at.
I understand that, and it makes sense for us.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, they need a piece of ground that's large enough for them to fit on it a building that they have envisioned.
I hear you.
Okay, so, I mean, I can offer that. But
you're of the opinion that they need 6 acres.
They wanted 12.
I know.
Right.
But you went back and said 6, and they said okay.
And even then, they were like, that might be tight. So I'm just saying that if it's not 6...
We're asking for a lot of other things. I don't want I don't want 0.3 acres to...
Well, I wouldn't want that to kill the deal.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I sure would like to square up my remaining piece. If that makes sense.
Well, not to complicate things, but if you had somebody come in, you sign this tomorrow, and you have a third-party offer come in for all 12 acres, I assume that's still going to trigger the right of first refusal. And so then... knowing the location might be even more important than to the extent you've got somebody else ready to take the remaining acres.
Yeah, I've been operating the assumption we're going to have to do a survey. It's just a matter of how quick can we get one done. And
the survey is going to delineate a 6-acre parcel.
Yes.
Okay.
So you are firm that they need, the offer has to be for 6 acres?
I think so. I really do. I mean, I can ask, but... But I think that's about the best I can do is ask them. I agree with what Chris is saying. If I go back with them and say, I want a sponsorship agreement, I want to reduce the number of years, and I don't want to give you the amount of acres you want.
Right. But you can say, it makes most sense from looking at it, to take that one corner, and then where Dave says where that pin is, and just draw a line straight across there. We have no idea right now what amount of land that is, but for at least talking purposes right now, that is what we're thinking.
It could be 5.9
acres. But it could be 5.
It could be 6.1 acres.
Yeah, it could be 5. That's what they're worried
about. I don't think so, because...
But we're not gonna figure this out by looking at this map. Numbers on it, right?
Right. I get a ruler out.
Right. If Melissa's staff couldn't figure it out based on what we already have, we're not gonna figure it out just by eyeballing it right now. So I am concerned about, as Ron just said, loading up too much. So I think he's got.
Can we have a sketch like the sketch that Melissa was referring to, and in approximately the configuration shown on the sketch?
Yes, I mean, we can even
only
do this.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
And, you know, somehow write it on here, and then...
In the approximate configuration shown on the sketch.
Yes, and then if you want us to add language to this that says a survey will be done by X date and paid for by whichever party's paying for it, and substitute that in for this exhibit, or do it through an amendment or something like that, we could. It's possible we could get it done before the agreement was signed, but I'd be pushing it.
I don't even know that I think it's desirable to get it done. I mean, to me, it's more like you're putting down a peg that says, this is what we've got in mind.
Right. Yeah.
If you have something really different in mind,
let us know.
At least you're looking at this sketch.
Yes.
You know, and
this would be our desire.
Right.
Now, if this doesn't work, let's keep calling.
What's that?
Are you making a face? Do you think that makes things...
I'm always making faces.
Well, we all are. Do you think that makes it more difficult if you just have a sketch?
I think they want 6 acres, and they're going to want a rectangle that's adjacent to the lot that they're leasing.
Well, they also need to be sensitive to the fact that they and they're picking those 6 acres. It should not negatively impact the remaining 6 acres in terms of its usability any more than necessary.
Well, that's one reason you bring it into the covenants and the PUD, is to make sure that their use is appropriate and that we have enough control.
Well, I'm thinking about the shape of the lot, because based upon that, there's some things you can do and things you can't do. So if you're really squirrely shaped lot, it's going to really impact the value of that.
Well, it's not going to be squirrely shaped for them, because it's more than 6 acres.
No. For LCRDA. Okay.
I like the idea of saying, here's the pin, here's the line. Does this work for you?
I can ask.
And if it's not, then let's keep talking. But we would like to be able to square off these two properties so that we have something left. And at some point in time in the future, you may want the lower half too. But at this point...
I will never vote to give up all of it. But okay.
Just saying.
Just for the record.
For one and for a single use, I should say that. No. Go ahead.
Well, I do think we need to kind of try now to bring this to ground. And
we have a few hundred other things.
And be clear enough with Ron and me so that we sort of know what our marching orders are.
So this is what I have at this point, is that on the right of first refusal, we try to reduce it from 5 years to 3 years. If they want the extra 2 years, they pay $10,000 per year that they extended up to 5 total. And then we ask about squaring off the lot that's using the point at the southwest corner of lot 1E and extending that over to the other line adjacent, whatever, parallel to...
To the southwest.
Well, it's another... we don't have to define that point, but we'll figure that out. To approximately square off that property so that where the remaining parcel is usable. And I'll ask about that. And then the other piece is to do a sponsorship agreement and look for $190,000. Sorry, I don't know.
No.
$125,000 to $150,000. Payable.
It's high to me, but
payable $25,000 per year.
Yeah.
$125,000 payable $25,000 per year for 5 years.
Well, let's just start a negotiation. It can always go down to 20.
Well,
I really
just told them what our number is.
Right. I really should have asked this question before, but I thought the new rules on economic development projects allowed us to go into a shade meeting. Which means you take notes, but the minutes and the recording doesn't have to be public until after negotiations are complete. That's how it used to. That's how it is with lawyers. That's not how it is.
That's
with
not
economic
my understanding
development.
Of how okay. it is. And again,
I just wasn't.
It's not in this section.
Okay,
of
I just wasn't sure.
It's not on
the written
yeah.
records are clearly exempt from public records disclosure. There does not appear to be a corresponding sunshine exemption.
Okay.
And that's after a good bit of research and some conversation
and
with the Attorney General's
okay.
office.
Good.
Yes.
I just wanted to ask because lawyer-client privilege and allows us to go into a shade meeting and publish those. I just wanted to ask that question.
And that's usually associated with legal proceedings.
It is. Yeah. I just, for some reason, I thought these issues had changed. I wanted to ask that before the board meeting because, yes, we're putting numbers out there. But I would be more comfortable letting Ann and Ron figure out those numbers because I'm not comfortable negotiating on the recording right now. It's a little high for my blood, but I'm comfortable letting you two make those decisions at this point.
Okay.
At least on the offer. I mean, that's
on the offer starting point. Yeah.
Okay.
So did we decide that we are? Well, I shouldn't say this. We need to vote on this.
Well, the board ultimately is going to vote on it, and there is no, it's not going to go on consent, so.
Well, so we don't need to vote on it.
I think we have to make a vote to recommend to the board, would be my opinion.
But we don't have anything to recommend yet.
We don't have a final version. I think what you're doing is you're giving me direction that says, here's what I'm asking you to do, or here's what I'm telling you to do, is to go back and negotiate these points and bring it back to the board for final review and approval.
Do you think you will have that before the board meeting?
I have to.
I would think you would.
And then the report to the board would be essentially what happened. This was the conversation. Ron went back in the direction of executive committee, and here's the latest.
And then this happened, and now you have to approve it.
And that agenda item at the board meeting would be handled similar through individual phone calls
within
Paraport.
So I have to make.
It's a lot of phone calls.
I have to make seven more phone calls.
Yeah.
Probably. Maybe eight.
Yeah, we do some. Repeat phone calls.
Yes. Yes, and then I have to call all of you and brief you on the update. So, yes, 11 phone calls. And I probably will try to get it done tomorrow so that we can have time to get the agenda, get the documents adjusted, and get the documents back out.
It's going to be a bit of a scramble.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Is there one decision maker right now at campus, or do you think that has been delegated in case the decision makers out of town or whatever?
I don't know.
All right. Well, I think that we have concluded item six.
I hope so.
Unless I... Okay. And thank you all. This is not an easy thing to do, but I think this is very, very helpful.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yes.
I believe I was invited to attend for that agenda. My excuse? Or
That depends.
Actually,
what Ron has
I moved
to
up to number seven, the avalanche consent,
sure.
So I thought you might want to stick
Absolutely
around for that.
Absolutely, I would too.
Okay, well, what we have to say about item seven is what is said right here. Ratification of my approval of an agreement with the Avalanche Partnership and Sunshine Community Lender consenting to a mortgage on leasehold interest on lots 2E and 3E consistent with the requirements under Article 7 of the authority's lease agreement with Avalanche. Requires consent from the authority for mortgages where the proceeds are not applied in approving the property. It's a refinance. And this involved also doing a conflict waiver for Melissa because it brought in Cassell's representation of Sunshine, which I have already signed as well. Questions?
I've got everything all good. I can make a motion to approve.
I'll be glad to second it.
It's approving both, the ratification agreement and the recusal.
Yes.
Okay. Questions? Comments?
It all looks good.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay.
See, that one was short.
Now you can leave.
I'm happy to stay as long as you like. I'm just mindful of the clock.
Yes, we appreciate that.
Thank you.
Job well done, Council.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Melissa. We'll
be in touch.
Yes. Be around tomorrow?
I am.
Okay.
Yeah, so we need to spend no more time on this than we have to. Ron, can you take over from here?
Yeah. Audited financial statements. The audit committee met. Dave, I don't know if you want to add to this, since you were at the meeting on the audited financial statements. It was an unmodified opinion. There were no issues.
There was an issue cited, but it was an error, and that has been cleaned up from the final version.
Yeah, and no issues and no recommendations. The audit committee did recommend and request approval of the audited financial statements for the year that ended. And I, in a draft agenda, which Ann has not seen yet, I have recommended that be included on the general business portion of the agenda for discussion and presentation at the board meeting. So
that sounds fine.
So no need to go do it again here.
Okay.
And you want to, under this item, do you want to? No, that's the next item. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Ron. Can I have a motion?
I'll move it.
I'll second it.
Quick question?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead and call for the vote.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Kristen?
Forgive me if I get some of this wrong, but it's been the FRS issue now 2 years waiting on the state. Is that going to go a third year? Are we still in that?
Well, it didn't last as long this time.
Right.
So we're 2 months ahead of last year, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're hopeful, but it could still,
okay. We
could still be running into this delay.
But at least it was, I thought it was earlier than last year, so, okay.
They gave us no belief to be that there would be any relief from that type of process going forward.
Okay. Well, the process is still going to be there. The question is timing.
And getting more efficient.
Yes. Yeah, it's a matter of the state. I got to believe eventually they'll get more efficient at it, but that's a lot of data they've got to crunch.
There's no relief on the process.
Well, I appreciate, Thomas Hal Ferguson's efforts, but both of you, thank you very much, the mm-hmm. committee.
Yeah. Okay, item 9, the RFP.
Yes, so we drafted an RFP for professional auditing services as directed by the board. The audit committee reviewed the RFP and had one change that they wanted made, which was to include an option for minority women and small business enterprise preference. So we included that. There was already a local preference included in the scoring. So we added that to the RFP. One change from what I presented to you is that I'd indicated, because it's the only place I knew of any certification, I saw on OED website that they have that certification. I included that in order to qualify for that preference, you would have to have that certification. Dustin pointed out to me that that's fairly new and that they don't have a lot of people. He believed they did not have a lot of people certified under that program. And so he asked that I also include any state certification for that to be acceptable as well. Frankly, what it comes down to is I didn't want to be the one trying to make that determination on whether you qualify under
those terms. I understand that.
So I was going to rely on what the state and the city and county do to qualify for that.
Okay. Makes sense to me.
Go ahead.
Yeah. You go.
I got some questions about that one.
Okay.
But I wouldn't mind finding a little... I don't know if I can answer or any of us can answer those questions. My experience on the Transportation Board is the only time that we deal with local procurement and state procurement. We cannot have the same targets for minority and women participation in subcontracting and procurement when we have state dollars associated with a road project. So I'm not sure including language about the state, maybe they have that in other procurement policies, but
it is only the certification that they are qualified as
that
we're relying on.
Okay.
It's not about whether it meets state statute or anything like that. It's just
are they qualified in accordance with, I think it's DMS has the program,
right,
where they certify that you are, in fact, a minority or women.
You are owned 51% or more by a minority or a woman.
And they've certified that that's true.
So yes, we have a lot of companies that qualify and play a role in our procurement process. So I'm not sure what Dustin is talking about there, but we've just consolidated our two offices under OEV, but they've been two functioning offices for a long time. The only other thing I would say on this is that to justify, I mean, again, I could ask more questions before next week, or we could talk about this if we don't want to spend too much time on this right now.
The intent was to put this on consent, so if you got questions, we need to answer them.
Well, it just opens a big can of worms to me, because right now we're going to go for like $400,000 for city and county to do a disparity study. You have to have that study to justify your percentage of minority and women participation in certain types of contracts and other things to have this program. Can we just do it and say there's extra points in our RFP evaluation? Maybe. I don't know.
We are not subject to any of the state purchasing requirements, with just a couple of exceptions.
So we can do anything we want in this.
To my knowledge, we can. Yes.
Okay.
We are not. And actually, if you get to the purchasing policy that's on the agenda, mm-hmm. I actually have in there at least a placeholder that says we need to develop a policy on local and preferences for local and MWSEs. So. And at that point, we could investigate further, you know, exactly how that needs to go.
I saw that. I guess I missed it when I was looking through the RFP.
So, but to my knowledge, we are not subject to any particular requirements as it relates to those. It's just something that was.
Do you have the language in front of you
for
right where
for the RFP?
Yeah, this part of the. I thought you might just have it right there.
Yes, I do. It's in the agenda. Would you like for me to pull it up? Let me turn this back on now.
How do you know how much weight to give this item in the point scale?
I actually...
Well, that's what I was going to get.
Okay, I actually got the county's policy. Mm-hmm. This RFP was modeled after the county's RFP they did several years ago, and it's changed a lot, but there are a couple things I left in there, and that this was one of them.
Okay.
The scoring piece, so it's like all the way down at the bottom.
It's page 18, is that right?
So the preference, so you have a local business preference, and there is actually a form for that. And theirs was that there would be a 5-point preference on the local preference. Actually, it said 5% and 3%. It's on a 100-point scale, so
okay.
I put it as 5 points and 3 points in those two situations. And then they go in and define what the local business definition is, and their certification information, which basically is their form. The form that they submit is the certification.
But, so 5 points for either.
And then the direction that I was given was make that equivalent, that preference equivalent to the local preference. Now, to tell you, one of the things that we're doing differently with this, and this is really important because I know we've all run into this in our evaluation committees that we've done. I like the way the county did this. I've never liked the whole point scoring system. This one makes a heck of a lot more sense, which is each individual evaluator scores it. And based on their scoring, they rank their top three, or they can actually rank all of them, but typically they rank the top three, depending on how many we get and if we're doing a cutoff or other things. Rank the top three, and you get points. You weight it, basically, that ranking, and then add it together, so kind of like we do with the TUD grant.
So you weight the ranking versus the score.
Right. So you get 3 points for first, you get 2 points for second, you get 1 point for third.
Yep.
You add all the points together, and that's how you base your final overall ranking. What that does is that eliminates the disparity between individual evaluators in terms of the scoring.
Yeah.
So I like that a lot.
Okay.
So in this case, these preference points are really only going to impact an individual scorer's evaluation.
And therefore it does something that I would applaud, which is Well, yeah, just kind of think about this.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's a consideration.
It's not going to be a make or break.
I don't think so. And then the other side of this, and I did have a conversation with our incumbent about, because of her experience in bidding on these things, I said, how much of this do you actually run into out there? And I don't think it's going to be a major impact on any of this. So it was requested by the committee, so I included it.
Okay, well.
And while that same piece came up, I don't know, it was on janitorial or something not too long ago, 2 years back maybe, where the scores came up and weighted a better deal than the three members wanted to see if they'd ranked the companies, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because one person says excellent, another person thinks very good is the same person's excellent. So, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It did come up. It has been an issue here before.
And my intent is to use this going forward.
I like it.
This format going forward.
I like it.
Okay. Anything else on item 9? And if not, can I have a
motion to approve?
Second.
Questions? Comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Good. Thank you. Item 10 is a contract.
Oh,
I have
one caveat. I'm sorry, I missed this. I need that approved subject to adjustments in the schedule. There's a schedule included in the RFP, and we have been trying to schedule the evaluation, the audit committee meeting for the evaluating the proposals. That schedule that's in the RFP is likely going to change.
Yeah.
My apologies.
Okay. Subject to schedule change, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Okay.
Move it again if you need it.
Everybody accept that amendment?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think
so ordered.
Okay.
We're all okay with that. Ron has got us a new HVAC agreement with Parker Services that represents pretty substantial annual savings. I have executed that contract, and I request your ratification.
And we had to execute the contract. We were behind on our preventative maintenance. We had some issues with trying to get this contract done. Explains a little bit of why we have a new property manager. But it is a good contract. It is a much better contract. We were only able to get two quotes. It's a challenge with these HVAC people is they know the competition. They don't necessarily always want this kind of business. We tried three other companies who either started, who came out and looked, but decided not to quote, but we just couldn't get three. So we had two, and they were actually very competitive. The incumbent and Parker Services. Parker Services is actually I think $1,200 or $1,500 less than the incumbent. But what got me most was the fact that the incumbent had dropped their price so much for no particular reason. And that had me concerned. Otherwise, I think, you know, staying with the incumbent might have been okay in this circumstance, but that just kind of got my attention.
It's a big red flag.
Okay. Okay.
I want to make note of one change that's not on in your packet. There was an item omitted from page 12. It's the note was on it's the cost plus on any materials that they use. The markup is 40%. It was in the signed document, Ann, that you signed, but in my translation to the agenda packet, I missed that version that had that number filled in.
You said 40%?
40%.
This says 42?
No, that's 42%. That's the cost reduction. That's the
saving. That's the cost reduction. I'm sorry. I just saw that 40.
I just found the 40 today, so I was looking at some.
You need a motion?
Yep.
Moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Thank you. Ron, can you explain what we're doing with the purchasing policy?
Can I explain it?
Explain it, please.
Okay. Well, I have a flowchart for that, but... What I'll tell you is the current purchasing policy has a lot of holes in it, doesn't really clearly define some things for me. So What I gave you, unfortunately, is not a red line because the changes were so major that it became unreadable. So I sent you basically the final version and gave you the link to the old document. But basically, what we're trying to do is make it very clear. I can't really see that very well. Make it very clear when we do which piece and what rules we follow. Okay.
I love your chart. It's awesome.
Yes. Okay. Because the first time I read this policy, I had no idea what it was I was supposed to be doing.
That's not good.
So
it's not surprising.
So I developed the flow chart, and then I just updated it to reflect this and took out some of the weirdness that was in it. Basically, and if you want, I can walk you through on the document itself, but I changed the on who the policy applies to by redefining who's an agent. The agent is the one that's subject to all of these purchasing rules. Before, it did not include the authority employees or the executive director, so I made that explicit in here that the authority employees and the executive director are, in fact, agents in this definition. And the board was included as in the policy. It still says they're covered under the scope, and only to the extent that they have certain responsibilities. They are not doing any purchasing. I had to make that very clear. You guys can't buy stuff. So the other thing I did is I reorganized these purchasing categories in Section 3 so that all of these decision-making points kind of line up, that these are the things that don't apply to the dollar value. These are sort of, I don't want to call them exceptions, that's what they used to call them. Okay, it's not a policy exception, it's just this is how we deal with this particular situation. So these purchasing categories, you make all of these other decisions before you get down to the dollar amount decisions. Okay, so the first decision is it construction of a facility for lease to the state? If that's the case, then there's a statutory requirement that you have to follow in this section 255, whatever that says. It's a competitive bid, okay? And that's only when we're doing facilities for lease to the state. Go ahead.
But it's not a facility that could potentially lease to the state in the future should they ever want to. It is... We initiate a project that is dedicated to
the state.
The state
is saying...
Because we have other... I mean, we have state tenants and other...
My guess is the DEP, the Collins Building and the Centennial Building were probably built under those statutes because they probably had the leases...
Tied to the state.
Tied to that.
Yeah, I can see when they...
My guess is, particularly if there's bonding involved and all
of
that.
Yeah, good point. Okay.
And if we ever get to that point, we'll follow that. So
I'm guessing not with the state.
Yeah, and then the other statutory requirement is what we just did, which is audit services. That was never mentioned in the policy before, but audit services have to follow the statute. The third one, emergency purchases, this is the same as what it was before, which the agent can use discretion. And actually it's the chair of the board who determines in her discretion what happens, and then it gets reported to the board. Okay, and then a board determined sole source. Example of that would be Larry Lynch's contract. We determined that Larry Lynch is the only person that can deliver the product at this point in time for these particular reasons. We did not go out and do an RFP for a program director because it costs $40,000. Okay, that's.
Does the county continuing services contract fall under fixed?
No, that's
or
that would
that's
be
on these, down
that's
line.
On down here. I'll get to that one. Actually, that is the next one. So the next one is sort of this item E that I have here, 3E, board contract approval only. So these are all things that are kind of unique that the board would have to approve regardless of what you're doing. The cooperative purchasing agreement is what the county contracts would be, and that's the way we did the architect for the Collins Building, for example.
I've seen it in here. It's fun to follow your pictures.
Yes, thank you. I think it's easier to follow
it is
pictures.
Easier, yeah. That's why I wasn't even looking at the document.
So these first three were in the existing policy. So the cooperative purchasing agreement, purchasing pursuant to a grant requirement. So if we get a grant for certain dollars and it says you must spend the dollars on these things this way, we got to follow the grant. Makes sense. And then the third one, then the next one is the where a contractor is selected by a tenant and it's required under the lease that they do that. And then this, I say C policy because there are a lot of caveats in there about how it gets done. And that language is exactly the same as what was in the prior policy. And then tech grant award determined by independent panel selection process. Okay, so that's our tech grant. Mm-hmm. So if we're awarding a grant, then we have an independent selection process. That is our procurement process. We're procuring these people to take the money. And then another one that was not included was the insurance procured through broker agreement. So we have the broker actually goes out and gets the quotes, reports them back to us, and then we say yay or nay, typically me, and then we take it to the executive committee and then so on. So that's just an exception. I want to make sure it was clear in there. The actual procurement of a...
Is that like insurance?
Yeah, insurance, yes. Yeah. So the actual procurement of the broker is covered somewhere else. Changes, amendments, or change orders to existing contracts that cumulatively do not exceed 25% of the original contracted value. Again, that will require board approval, but we don't have to go do a separate procurement just because we've got to increase the contract a little bit to cover something that goes on. So those are all of those things that just require board approval.
Good summary.
Okay, and then the other thing that I did is in item F, okay, they in the previous policy they had mentioned dollar amounts, but they gave you no way to calculate what that, how do you know what that dollar amount is? Is it the annual purchase price? Is it a one-time purchase price? So I address how you define what the dollar amount of the deal is, because also you don't know until you do the bid. So it's really based on, the way I defined it was an actual or estimated fixed cost of the goods or services for the full term of the agreement. Okay, so if you, this is what we estimate it's going to be, that's how you use it, and it's for the full term of the agreement. So if you do a three-year deal, okay, the dollar value is for the full 3 years. Except, I say, the cost of renewal and option periods is not included in the total dollar value of the purchase if the renewal and option periods are at the option of the authority or by mutual agreement of the parties. So we're not locked, if we're not locked in on a three-year term, if we can, you know, if we have the right to terminate after a year or whatever, then I'm not counting that in the dollar value. It's only, the concern here is, what are we allowing these people to commit us to in determining what that
hard
dollar amount is?
Yeah.
Yeah, what's the hard commitment? So if we get into a deal and we go, hey, this is a bad deal, we need to get out of this, that's the dollar amount we're concerned about, is what we're locked into. And then the other thing I did is I moved some of the language out of the old policy that said that basically this decision point right here, which is funds in the budget, okay? Every one of these other selections said the same thing. So I just moved it up here and said, all purchase amounts must be provided for within the current or next fiscal year where the purchase, in parentheses, where the purchase falls within the next fiscal year, annual budget. So it's got to be budgeted.
Yeah.
If it's not in the budget, it says, if not, then approval of the board must be granted prior to procurement. You can't go out and procure something that's not in the budget. Okay. And then we have an unusual step, which is sometimes we do things that don't have a fixed fee or cost that's known. So if it's not a fixed dollar amount, such as a commission-based deal, like a real estate broker commission-based fee-for-service.
Hourly.
Hourly, right.
Yeah.
Then I have two exceptions. One is, if it's a general counsel, for general counsel and real estate broker services, not based on a fixed dollar amount, you have to competitively procure it. Okay, I think the assumption is general counsel are always going to want to competitively procure, and the real estate, well, it says if it's not based on a fixed fee. I mean, if it's based on a fixed fee, and Melissa said, I'll do it for $5,000 a year.
It falls in
there. Then it falls into the dollar amount considerations, because it's a known amount. Okay, but she's not going to do that. So, and my guess is I think based on the other deals we had, they were more in the $40,000 range.
But you could get a communications contract that's fixed or hourly, like for a PR firm. I mean, somebody like that could come in under either one.
I mean,
a lawyer is not going to, but
or an insurance broker.
Or an insurance broker. There are others that could
maybe be in that category, maybe not, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So I made the exception for general counsel and real estate broker services that basically we're always going to want to do that. Everyone else, it's board approval. Okay. So the board gets to determine if it's not based on a fixed dollar amount. Then, for example, banking services, we're not paying any fees. There's no dollar amount involved. They did an RFP for broker for banking services. It's not really necessary. And so under this policy, I would just ask the board for permission to, if I want to go out and re-procure something, I would just say, how do you want me to do it? And then the fixed dollar amount. Okay, so these are the old buckets that they had in the previous policy. I did take out, well, I'll say that in a minute, but basically the $2,500 level, less than or equal to $2,500 is pretty much all of our routine maintenance stuff, day-to-day stuff. In that case, the agent has the discretion. So Talcourt has the discretion. If it's in the budget, they have the discretion to go out and contract for those services that are less than or equal to $2,500. No additional oversight required. Now, the employees, it's based on what I authorize them to do. Okay, but they have credit cards, and that's basically the only way they're buying stuff anyway. And if they buy anything else that's not in the budget, I'll kill them. Put that on the record. That's on the record. I can't kill you now.
It's true. Mark that one. I see him. No.
The thing I did add in this is that to give myself the authority to execute all contracts required for purchases pursuant to that paragraph. So currently, our bylaws say that the board chair must sign every contract unless it's otherwise delegated by policy or in my contract, I believe is the exact language. So what I'm saying is if we're buying something, if we're saying, hey, you can buy something for less than $2,500, do we really need the board chair to sign a contract that might be a simple purchase agreement for, you know, to buy something? I mean, that's the whole thing, basic purchase agreement. Do we need the board chair to do that? Okay. So I made a lot of assumptions here, so if you don't like it, let me know. I don't know if you want to go be signing all those contracts. And frankly, I think some of this matches practice. I don't think that in every situation we've actually, if we've signed a purchase agreement, that we've brought that to you. I don't know that. So it just seems irrational to have to take every little purchase.
Well, if you're authorized to go ahead and buy it without board approval, I mean, it makes sense, and you've tied the...
Right.
The execution to those different. I mean, once you get over $10,000, you've got.
Yes. Then we get
board chair authorizes, right?
Exactly.
That makes
sense. Yes. So $2,500 or less, agent discretion. I can sign contracts. $2,501 to $10,000, they get quotes, and I have to approve, even for Talcourt. So if Talcourt says, "Hey, I need to spend $5,000 on something," I'm saying, "Go get quotes, show it to me, and then I'll make the decision." And I'll execute any contracts related to that. One thing I took out is they had for some reason they plugged in a $5,000 middle exception that says anything under $5,000 you don't have to get written quotes. Between five and ten you had to get written quotes. I said, well, that's silly, let's just get written quotes. Anything between $2,500 and $10,000. Okay. Frankly, I'd probably get written quotes on anything less than $2,500. But okay, and then so again, I have the authority to execute the documents on that. And then the third level, the purchases $10,001 to $50,000. This is the same. I just tried to clarify some of the language on what exactly an informal bid is and how that's different. But the important part here is we can go out and get informal bids, but it still requires board approval, and only the chair can sign those contracts between $10,000 and $50,000. The $10,000 makes sense. $10,000 or less, I can sign checks for $10,000 or less. So I think it would only make sense to be able to actually do the purchase for $10,000.
And you have a provision in there so that you can't layer those things.
Layer them.
Splitting contracts.
You mean like some other people?
Like some other entities
like some
might have.
Organizations have done.
Might have.
Yeah.
Or might not have done.
I don't have anything in there. I would never do such a thing.
I understand.
But yes, I that probably makes sense to put in there.
You know, probably not some. I mean, we got a smaller organization. We have to, but because it's in
the public imagination now, everything else, it might not be bad to...
Yep.
Good point on that. But I think we are very different with our controls and
sure
size of the organization, obviously.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's a written document.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I can think of no example where we actually do multiple contracts.
I can't either.
But, okay.
Or that you have enough money that you could split it up into different contracts.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
So again, that's that level, board approval, informal bids. So basically, and I'll show you in a minute, I have some examples of where those what contracts we currently have that fall in each of these areas, so you can kind of see what we're talking about. But the big one is the more than 50,000, we've got to do an RFP. That's the same as what we had before. I think I did spell out maybe some more details, and again, only the chair can execute those contracts. As I said, I have in paragraph 4, I have kind of a placeholder that says we're going to develop a policy and procedures on local and disadvantaged businesses. And only because I don't have time to go do all the research and figure all that out. I really need to get the rest of this thing in place. But I thought while I was thinking about it, I'd put it in there. And then I also added this some of the stuff about contracts. I do want to note a couple of changes that I made from your draft. I'm sorry, I missed that before. And they're just minor things under D, sole source. It says that the last section, it says that you may be purchased from such source without further compliance with these guidelines. Since I've added all this other language, I had to clarify that and say in compliance with Section 3 of this policy. So the contractual language and the other stuff is still subject to those policies, but not... Anyway, it's just a structural problem I had to fix. And that was in two places. I did that in D and also at the first paragraph of E.
I got a comment about 5C.
Yep.
Leon County's human rights ordinance was expanded to include sexual orientation back in 2010. And that is public accommodations, housing, other things like that. If there's no objection, I think we may want, yes, state and federal, this is the list of protected classes, but in Leon County, it is different. So we may want to match the human rights ordinance on our protected classes. I don't know. But on the
which would just be
equal opportunities. I think it's just sexual orientation. That's the only that's the only thing that is that ordinance added to it. It's slightly different in purchasing and other things like that, so I don't know if we need to do that, but it is in effect in Leon County. So
you say it's not in federal?
It is absolutely not. I mean, the protected classes have never been expanded at state or federal level. That's why locals have done it.
I think the driver behind this is in the federal contracts, so like the National Park Service and all of that are required to do this. But
got it. Well, and in that sense, they may not want to see it included there if it doesn't meet their requirements. It's just a thought. I think it would be good for us to do it anyhow. The industries that we represent, you know, they are attracted to communities. This is an economic issue. Florida Chamber, others are going to say this, that will protect LGBT as well. So there is an economic angle. I don't want to make it too political or anything. So it would require
the addition of the word orientation?
It would be sexual oriented. It is different than sex. That is gender, right?
But just sexual orientation.
Comma, sexual orientation.
Or national origin. Yeah, but if you are quoting from the federal equal opportunity provisions, you may not want to include it in the quotes. I don't know. I would just suggest we look at that a little bit because there is a governing ordinance within Leon County.
Why don't we just go with what Leon County does?
Yeah, that's my point.
If it doesn't affect us negatively when we get to the feds or anything, you know.
I don't see why it would.
Okay.
I think being more restrictive is better than being less restrictive when you look at the feds looking at us.
Yeah, okay. I think this might be good to pass it in county. Stop there. So. Okay.
All right. I'll do that.
I did put in the, another change, sorry, in 5A. It's funny, we read this, Peggy and I, about 20 times, and each time saw something different. But in 5A, in the last sentence, it says the executive director may authorize and execute the extension and or renewal of any contract. I'd like to strike everything after that. I originally added that language, and add comma, provided the cost does not change or the cost change was permitted in the contract. So basically what I'm saying is I have the authority to extend or renew any contract that has a provision for extension and renewal where that extension or renewal is in accordance with the contract. So we have a lot of contracts, for example, that might be a one-year contract with 2 one-year extensions. And in the contract it says either the cost stays the same, we may negotiate that the cost stays the same, or there's an escalation clause of some sort in there, maybe it goes up 3%. That was negotiated in the original deal, it was in the RFP, it was awarded based on that. Why should we have to go through additional steps to just extend the contract for another year? Good example, both janitorial and landscape have this in it, verbatim. We procured them, we've had them for a year, we want to extend the contract for another year. Why? Give me the authority to extend that contract. Because my concern is, are they doing the job? If they're doing the job and it's in the contract, I want to extend the contract.
Well, and if some member of the board has reached some conclusion that they're not doing the job, you would have heard about it before you
went.
Go ahead.
Well, and then in B, so we cover the other possibility, which it says, without prior approval of the board, the contract term shall be for no more than 1 year. Contracts may provide for up to 2 additional 1-year extensions. The contracts and performance of vendors retained by the authority shall be re-procured at least every 3 years unless otherwise directed by the board. That's what you're going to go to.
I was actually going to mention that made me feel better about...
Yes.
Yes.
And that's the intent. Yeah, I can't sit here and just keep redoing it. Plus, it does say... It's got to be in the contract.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm good with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And if I want to go a fourth year for what extenuating circumstances like we had with the auditor, I have to come back to the executive committee of the board and say, I need to do this, here's why, and you guys are going to have to approve it. I'm trying to just make the automatic thing sort of less burdensome on the board. Mm-hmm. It's not because I'm power hungry or any of that. Because I want the power. I want to buy stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. And then purchases without a contract, just basically say we can buy stuff without a contract if it's paper or whatever. And I try to put some verbiage around that. And then also I added language about conflicts of interest and basically tying into code of ethics that already exists on the books. That is all.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Motion to applaud. Okay, I'll go with that. Let's see, applaud Ron's efforts in a spreadsheet. Yes.
Love a spreadsheet.
Yes.
Oh, wait.
There's more.
I did do a spreadsheet. Thank you.
Oh, you did do?
Yes.
Right. I thought
that's
you did.
Actually
showing the
flow chart's actually a Word document.
I'm sorry. Flow chart and your spreadsheet with the contracts under each one.
Yeah, I just so that you know what we're talking about here. So... Insurance premiums, that's procured by the broker, $56,000. Architect was a cooperative purchasing agreement, that was $20,000. So the informal bids would be the landscaping, janitorial, HVAC replacements, and HVAC preventative maintenance would fall into that informal bid process. And then you got all these little ones that are just quote-based, and then RFPs would be the property manager, the legal, the auditor, according to statute, and then the insurance broker. Because of the way it's structured, it's actually a 3-year contract. I have to look at it a little closer to see. I think because it is cancelable, I think that maybe it wouldn't have to be. But the 3 years would be $24,000, and that actually would not be RFP under that. It would be an informal bid. And then we have a couple of sole sources, which is the EDP director, and then our fire systems inspection is with somebody that has a proprietary system, so we kind of have to go with them. Okay.
Motion right. Seconds on the floor, Madam Chair.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay.
I promise you the next one's much easier. This is what we call Denise's policy. She needs a higher credit limit.
So let me just ask a question. On the purchasing policy, this will go to the board?
On consent, it was the intent.
Okay, good.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I want to talk to you after is the board agenda for next week. I've got a draft agenda for you to look at. On the purchasing policy, because the changes were, I'm sorry, not purchasing, the credit card policy, we did do a red line of that. The basic changes, it says that I get to approve the issuance of credit cards because...
Except for yours.
Except for mine. And that's, I think, yeah, that makes sense. The idea being that it's with the credit limits we're talking about, basically it's the same as my check writing authority, you know, check signing authority, which is $10,000. Why would we need to do something different on credit cards?
This policy in the last are vestiges of many years ago in a different tone.
So my stupid question is when we refer to the authority's accountant.
That is Christy.
Okay.
Right now, yeah, our accountant is is through contract right now.
Yes. Is that not defined?
No, it's not. I don't know.
It just says our accountant.
Yeah, it says our accountant.
Tell you what, I'll put in the beginning there, I'll put somewhere that says define who the accountant is.
Yeah, I think that.
Well, do we need to define the company, or this is a policy.
I can say
that accounting service could change.
Yes, just to account, I think it's fine.
But what was your concern that
I'm having a hard time articulating what my concern is. We don't know who the person is. It's just whoever our accountant is.
Yes.
Whoever Talcor says it is.
Yes.
Well, not even whoever we decide. It may not even be Talcor.
Well, I mean, if we were to change firms, yes.
Right.
But Talcor could change who it is without our having anything to do with it. Okay.
So leave it alone?
I think leave it alone, then, if we're okay with that. And are you, I mean, obviously, all of my questions on this to you have to do with if you were not the executive director. So I think that's how you have to look at this stuff.
Yes.
So you're happy with the level of review that you think we get from our accountant?
Yes. The monthly bills.
Why would we say accountant versus treasurer?
We should not be putting day-to-day responsibilities on the treasurer for being part of the day-to-day accounting controls.
And I don't think that it's likely that anybody who's a treasurer, with yourself perhaps accepted, is really going to look at it the way somebody who, hopefully, if it is their job, is your job that you get paid for.
And we have other controls in place that the accountant is responsible for.
Okay.
It's the segregation of duties. The accountant currently gets the monthly credit card statements for each credit card. They see all those charges. Okay, I see their charges because in the authorization for payment process, I review all of those charges. So that level of review is happening. In terms of the level of review of me, I already have purchasing authority for anything over $10,000, right? So, and can sign the checks. Under $10,000. Yeah. So how is this any different? The payment process doesn't matter.
Well, an observation. As a banker, one of the areas that I saw companies get more trouble with was credit card for employees. It happened every way you could think of. People wanting to go in and get an advance, then do their travel, not have to refund the advance, then get paid back for their travel, double dipping, periods of time in which they were consolidating personal company, periods of time in which the statements weren't getting reviewed properly and paid properly and subsequent getting past due and poor credit ratings. I've seen it all. So I just would say, be comfortable with what we're doing here, all of us, because there is a lot of... Now, we're small. I appreciate that. And I'm talking generally about companies that were much larger and had multiple people with multiple cards and so on. But there's a lot of area in here that could be played with, and we just need to monitor carefully.
Let me take it from a different angle, though. We were at one extreme with absolutely no... internal controls whatsoever. I mean, the worst of the worst,
yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
The pendulum swung complete 180,
yes.
In my opinion, way too far.
Yes.
To me, you can't legislate against every bad thing someone's going to do or make rules. I mean, some people will just, nobody in this room, will take advantage of circumstances, but you put in as many controls as you can and as many eyeballs on the reports as you can to make it an efficient process and control it as much as possible, right? I think we're getting back to the middle territory where we should be, where it's a professional organization that trusts its employees, particularly an executive director, to oversee this, but also has enough controls built around that.
I don't disagree with anything.
Yeah, I agree that the treasurer doesn't need to be doing this or anything like that. So I understand there's a lot of danger in a lot of different ways, in a lot of different things. But this is getting us to a posture where I think this may even be overdue. I think we're ready for this, and we've got enough of those controls around. I mean, 10 years from now, we could be a much larger or large organization and have much more staff and need an in-house accountant. Maybe we don't want to contract those. I mean, businesses do that all the time and have internal controls that are sufficient, right? So I think this works
for us. I'm not suggesting any amendment to any of this. I'm just saying this is an area, though, that we need to be keeping our antenna up. We need to make sure Christy's doing what she's supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
If Christy isn't really double-checking it, then we get an issue there.
Yeah,
make sure our auditors are double-checking Christy.
We have other controls in place that if Christy doesn't do her job, we get a comment on the audit.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Okay, so.
And that's why I say making sure auditors make sure Christy's doing what she's supposed to do.
Well, I've had the same experience that Davis has, and you probably have too.
Oh, I have, absolutely.
So,
particularly with fuel cards.
Is the limit on each card $5,000?
Not currently.
Well, is it going to be?
Not more than $5,000. My limit right now is $5,000. It's screwy the way it's set up right now.
But you were referring to 10, and that was your check writing authority.
That's my check writing authority.
But these would all be 5.
Maximum of five.
So the ones that you're going to approve for other employees could be lesser limits.
Yes.
And how many do you foresee?
We currently have 3. Each of us has a card.
I figured that out.
Yes, very good. Here, the way it is currently set up is.
I'm glad he didn't say 5.
Yes. A little abuse going on. My wife has one. What am I saying? So. The way Hancock has it set up right now is we have 1 credit limit of $5,000 for all 3 cards combined.
Okay.
But theirs has a limit of $1,500, I believe it is.
Okay.
But that comes out of my 5.
Okay.
So the problem we run into is we can't do what we need to do on that amount of money. I need to work with Hancock. Hers is fine at $1,500. Hers is not. She's booking events and securing rooms and things like that that takes more dollars and they tend to get bunched, you know, you're making travel arrangements and you got to do the tech grant venue, stuff like that.
I need
to be able to up hers, to increase her credit limit, and I can't do that right now. It takes board action to do that, and I may, you know, get somebody else, and you know, Peggy gets carried away, and I say, Peggy, we're going to drop you down to 1,000.
And then you are going to have to figure out anything about points.
Points?
Mm. Credit card points. That's the always stupid issue, but I'm going to leave that up to you.
We don't have points.
All right. Then it is not an issue.
No air miles, no points.
Right.
No. Who is the owner of the credit card? Is it our authority?
It's the authority.
Individual.
It says so in the policy that it's the debt of the authority.
Mm-hmm. And the authority's name will be on the credit
card.
It
is on the credit card. Which
and
is,
will the individual's name be also on
it? It is also on the card. It is necessary to put the, well, obviously you got to have their name on it. But
I don't think.
It also, you have to have the authority's name on there in order to use the sales tax exemption to pay for a hotel room.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or anything. You can't get reimbursed for something and claim the sales tax exemption. The authority actually has to pay for it, which is one of the reasons we use it for things like securing rooms
Oh, see, now I'm understanding a little bit better.
But that's why I asked the question.
Yeah.
And we'll have the tax-exempt number on there and everything. It's an obvious...
The tax-exempt number is not on the card.
Oh, it's not. Oh, you can get it on the card. Ours is on the card.
The company... Okay, that's great. The company name, though, is... Or the organization name has to be on the card in order for... Because then you give them the exemption certificate, and that name has to match what's on the card.
Okay. Well, I'm good with this.
Nobody gets scared by this, because really, I don't use this very often, but for the same purposes Ron's talking about, that's what it's going to look like.
Yeah.
Do you have a fixed house limit?
No, sir. but it has Leon County, and it says at the top, Leon County for official use only.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got in our, so.
And Dave, if at any time you really want to review those credit card charges, all you have to do is look when you get the request for payment that Christy sends out. Those invoices are actually there along with all the receipts. So you can review it if you choose.
I move that the policy as presented be recommended to the board for its approval.
Second.
Questions, comments?
Eric?
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. Thank you. Thank you, Ron. These are thankless things to do, but they need to be done.
And I put them off for so long. But
it's good.
Well, what have you been doing?
Yeah, really.
But I needed to be able to do the purchasing policy because it was getting...
So, Kristen, the next two things are you.
And I'm going to run really quick, probably quicker than I normally do, but I got a little bit of a new world and have a... teenager to deal with this afternoon, so apologies for that, but I'm going to have to go, if that's okay with everybody, so I'll miss y'all's reports. Jumpstart update, Ron, we could probably have, I'm not sure where you all are on the agenda for the board next week, so we don't have a formal recommendation from the Jumpstart committee yet, and that's something that I've had kind of was on my mind about talking through today, but it may be something that we want to talk through that next week. We'll probably have more of an update and a formal report that we could work up next week, and Ron and I could talk through that. So just in your conversation about the agenda, that's one thing that's on
my
mind.
I haven't suggested to be on that agenda.
Okay. So I feel like we've made a tremendous amount of progress. We're kind of in a holding pattern right now while we gather some other specifics. Ron and I met with the architects. That was last week. And we also have a meeting with some private sector folks at the end of this week that may or may not present another opportunity for us. There's some other things that we're looking at, and additional information that Ron needed to gather, and you could flesh any of this out if you want, but I'm trying to sum it up as fast as I can before the Jumpstart Committee could come back together and really nail down a proposal for the board. So I would love to have thought we could do it before June 1st, but I think at this point it's obviously not at the next board meeting unless we wanted a special board meeting. That proposal will probably come to exec and then the June 1st board meeting. Would you agree with that? Okay.
I just don't want anything we're doing as a board to hold up what you're doing as a committee.
Yeah. And that was going to be my one question for the board agenda next week, is that we have authorization, I believe we do, to continue to pursue the work we need to do with the architect. We've already got that. It's done. And anything else could be brought to you or brought to the exec. So I think we're in good shape on that end. You agree?
Yep.
So the only other thing on that is that I think Ron said it in the past, but there's an opportunity for Economic Development Administration grants. I'm not hearing any concerns right now about the scope of those grants and new budgets and other things.
Just an update on that. I actually got a call on Friday from Greg Bede from the EDA. So he's actually pursuing us to get more information. So he's very interested. I gave him an update on where we were on the architect process, which we have to have in order to know the cost, in order to even put an application in. So he's excited about that. He says, just staying in touch. I kind of gave him the same timeline you just did, and we will get back together. So that was a good sign.
And Leon County's relationship with the Economic Development Administration, is pretty good in general. So, okay, any other questions on Jumpstart?
That sounds
good. Well, a little bit of delay that we're beginning to incur, is that going to be caught up, or does we push the whole project a little bit further back, 30 days, 90 days, whatever?
We are not ready to apply for any permits. We need more time on that since the architect can move forward.
Yeah.
Now, engaging an engineer, something else like that, if we need to do other things, I think we might be able to go through the chair and exec on that. That's the only other thing in my mind, but we're nowhere near ready to engage.
Yeah.
Or they will work with other consultants.
Are we relatively still on schedule?
We are later than I think we would have liked, but...
Then can we catch that up to get back on schedule, or are we pushing the schedule further back?
I think there could be a phased approach to construction, which may help us, but the architectural assessment is what's going to give us that information.
Okay.
I don't think we could have moved the committee any faster necessarily. Mm-hmm. We did a lot of work. Eric's been sitting with us. And anything you want to chime in, Eric, on this?
No,
We've done a lot of work, a lot of assessment on.
You need to know what the building will allow you to do before you can.
Right. We have pulled down all the information from the entrepreneurs and the survey and everything. Information from, you know, all these different sources. The architectural piece is one of the last pieces. All that together will allow the committee to make a recommendation. That's what we need.
I'm working on a bit more formal business plan and financial model. That's I think going to be necessary to make that final decision. And the key is we've got to look at how the architectural is tied together with the business model, which is to decide how much revenue can we generate based on the space plan, lease rates. All of that stuff's going to have to factor in. So I need to get the time to sit down and do that. So we had a certain project campus that jumped right in the middle of all this stuff.
And I don't want to jump ahead of anything. We have a meeting this Friday, but I may be more optimistic. I think this other opportunity might create more space in Jumpstart Building for... The demand is pretty high, but may open up other opportunities for us. So I think going to June may not be bad, because that could really change some of the dynamics there. So,
but I'm not critical.
Right.
It's more important to get this right than...
I'm not critical. Yeah.
But the demand is right here. We have got... If we moved it past June, I would be concerned. Because that's a year in conversation, and people might think, what are we doing, or something.
Yeah, here we go again.
But I think right now, everybody knows we've been moving pretty quick. The only thing I'll say about CRTPA and all of that is that FSU gave an update, a presentation to the Blueprint Board in February. Denise and I were just talking about a number of different communication pieces and other things. But we also talked about the Providence neighborhood. I have talked to them, and I suggested to her that there's some other opportunities to engage Providence with education and other things. But I've also talked to a couple of people involved, and I think there's some good timing to have conversations with them about our future plans, road plans, others, and reaching out to them. I'm just putting that on the table. And
that correlates well with this meeting with the engineering person.
Faye Gibson.
Yes. That is the...
But what is her title?
She's the branding consultant.
Branding consultant.
Yeah.
Okay.
And wife of.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
No, I think this is all working together real nicely.
Did you want to flesh out any more details at the board meeting? Do you want an agenda item for that to talk more about that, or...
I don't think I can certainly give you more detail, and I could even pull down some of the information from the CRTPA meeting or from the Blueprint meeting on the FSU update if you'd like. Just,
I'm afraid the FSU update might be...
It may already be outdated.
That's what I'm... Okay. Exactly what I'm trying to say. Yeah.
But I could just do
you
a
could
status
talk generally
on the Blueprint projects and kind of where we are. I could do something.
Because right now the general business items that we're talking about are the audit, Project Campus, Jumpstart status update, and working with the CRTPA. That's all we've got.
Yeah, I would like to talk about this.
Okay. Project Campus happens.
I probably...
That conversation is like today.
I may not be able to type up something before you send out the agenda tomorrow, but...
I don't think it needs to be typed.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I could do it as a supplement, or I could just hand it out.
Or do a PowerPoint and do something.
Okay. You good with me?
Yeah.
I gotta work.
Yes, go.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for being here.
I appreciate all of you. Yes.
Does your teenager make you younger?
That's not
the way necessarily my teenager, but it's certainly. We spent 8 days in a small cabin on a cruise together, so it's feeling a little bit more like it used to be.
Exactly.
Okay, I don't have anything. Denise?
Okay. I'll try to go through it really quickly, but with the tech grant program, we got 10 applicants. We will be announcing the finalists on April 12th. We have the 5 judges who have already received the applications and are going through their process. The venue has been booked at Goodwood Museum again. We are going to have a professional AV company take care of all of that so that we don't have to deal with it. Food has been ordered. We're going to have 4A catering. They do a lot of stuff here. They have a great report. I think we use them a lot. So.
What is the date again?
It is May 17th from 5:30 to 7:30.
Have we published that out? I don't know if it's on my
It's on our website. I've put it on several of our newsletters.
You getting a newsletter, Dave?
Yep.
I hope so.
I don't have it in my calendar, though.
Okay.
May 17th.
Yeah, May 17th.
5:30.
5:30?
Yeah.
5:30, 7:30.
Goodwood.
Yep.
Yes. So we have the judges. I just got all 5 PR firms confirmed to do their work. And then so far we've gotten $3,300 in sponsorships, so we're in the process of acquiring more. I've asked Ron to help, and I'll be asking the board as well.
It's not unusual for this to start at about this point.
Yeah. 10 applicants, what we were hoping for?
I'm happy with it. From what Ron has told me in the past, we've had as little as 7 and as many as 18. A lot of them are, it's a diverse array. We have a couple of robotics people, cybersecurity, manufacturing sensors. So we have kind of a diverse, and even a few apps. So it's a diverse kind of blend this time around. So I'm interested to see how everyone's going to be judged.
10, 11 is typical.
Yeah.
Okay.
18 was really the extreme high, and 7 was our first year, and it was pretty low. We tried to do all 7 on the finals night and have 7 pitches instead of 5. That didn't work. We found that real quick.
But,
yeah.
And we do have an MC. Larry Lynch will be MCing our event as well. So we'll have that.
If I could just chime in real quick on the tech grant.
Sure.
We had an interesting development. We actually have somebody give us some money back.
Yeah.
Oh. That's amazing.
Yes. Shocking.
How did that come to pass?
NP Group. Who had the wind turbine sensors, and you probably know this, they basically successfully completed their NSF STTR Phase 1 project in December, and that's the reason they got the money, was to help do that. They got their proof of concept. They have a couple of companies that are interested in commercializing, being partners in that commercialization. And then they are going to actually shut down the company because there's going to be an 8-month funding gap with their NSF Phase 2 funding. So they're just saying, we got what we wanted. We want this money to go back and help others. So we're going to give it back. $3,902 out of $15,000. So
wow.
They're some honest people.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's great. That is great.
Wish them well in their future.
Yep.
And he wrote some very nice things about how in their application, they spoke very highly of LCRDA and all that we're doing, so that's good.
Yep. Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. So Tech Topics, our last event was on March 7th. We had 27 attendees. It was on artificial intelligence. Having the topic really interested people, so I think I'm going to continue with that theme of having different topics. We're talking about in either late August or early September having the next topics be on astronomy with I believe it's a total solar eclipse that's going to be going on in the end of August. So we're going to try to do that around that. EEP alumni and Tech Grant Winner Circle, we combined those groups since we took over EEP alum and we turned them into the Entrepreneurs Club at Innovation Park. We had our first event, which was held February 28th, and that was a great response. We had, I think, around 35 people. Unfortunately, we had a lot of people who had to cancel to do other events that same night.
We had, what, 47 registered, I think it was?
Yeah, I think we had something like that. But it was a really good event. They want us to do more, so I'm going to be working on possibly doing another one in the fall, depending on funding and what we do with budget. But I have added some information about the E-Club to the Innovation Park website, and that's under programs. Discovery on Parade turned out to be a great success. We developed our display, and it's really nice. We can use it over and over again. We've also created printed materials, which I brought over really quick, just if anybody wants to see them.
These are awesome. I just keep those on me, and I hand them out.
There you go. They're just wrap cards, very simple, easy to see.
Looks great.
Thank you.
She has a picture that she's going to put in her report to the board that shows the actual display that she did for Discovery on Parade. It's awesome.
Good.
Yeah. The next thing is the Entrepreneurial Excellence Program. We're currently in class 13. We ended up overselling the program with 14 companies. Two dropped out, so we have 12 in the program. We actually, at the end, had to start turning people away, so we have 3 people signed up for the fall already for the next program.
Good.
So that's good, and we have additional interest as well. Tallahassee Science Festival, I'm partnering with the Mag Lab to work on the PR communications and marketing for that. It is scheduled for October 28th at Clayman Plaza. It's going to be targeted more toward the younger, I would say K-12 classes, so I'll be sending out save the dates for that to the entire board. Going into strategic partnerships, I met with Kristen Roberts again and Faye Gibson. We have a lot of great ideas that we can work together to partner with, and I think I'll add a little bit more once we talk more with her, but there's a lot of potential with partnerships there, and she's very interested in kind of working with the Providence neighborhood and a couple other things.
She also asked us to update one of the signs that was all faded.
It says
at FAMU, FSU College of Engineering, so faded you could hardly read it. So I've been waiting to do those things because I was looking at doing all of them. Mm-hmm. But since she asked, we went ahead and just did that one.
I'm glad that we get these requests and people can see we are responsive. That's very important.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Just one last thing, with social media and SEO, we are continuing to build it. We've actually gotten up to 327 followers on Twitter.
SEO?
We're working on it and getting there.
No, you said SEO.
I'm sorry, social media. Well, social media and SEO.
Yeah, but do they know what SEO is?
I'm going to get there.
Oh,
I'm doing social media right now.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
You must, for the lawyer, you have to define the term.
He was looking at my face. I was making a face. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Yeah, for social media, we have 327 followers on Twitter, 176 on Facebook, and Instagram was one that I created once I came in, I think, back in August, and we're up to 97 followers so far. And then we have 10 on LinkedIn, so any help with that would be greatly appreciated. On to SEO, which is search engine optimization. That's kind of the Google.
I do know what that is.
Yeah, the Google finding and everything. I implemented an SEO strategy earlier this year, and I've been kind of tweaking it a little bit. But I've gotten to the point now that when you just type in Innovation Park on Google, we come up for the first 5 or 6 slides. And also on the right-hand side, the Google kind of tag, we are Innovation Park. So we don't even need a Tallahassee in it. We are coined as Innovation Park.
That's great. That's
awesome, yeah.
Wow.
And in addition to that, some other keywords that I've been working on is North Florida Research Park. We come up number 3 and number 4 on page 1. And Florida Research Park, we come up number 6 on page 1. So we're going to keep working on getting that, but I think we're going to get there, and I think it's going to be working really well. And as I continue adding things onto the website, it'll add to it.
So where does the theft of $640,000 show up on the website?
I've actually been pushing it.
Okay.
I've actually been pushing it. The only thing is with pictures. She comes up, I think, on page 3 or 4 when you look on images.
Okay.
But that goes to like a WCTV one, that goes to Tallahassee. It doesn't go to actual Innovation Park.
Okay.
So
That's something Chris,
better.
Chris is very interested in how that thing off
of. If you actually just type in Innovation Park, it doesn't come up with the first five or six points.
Good.
So, I've worked on that, I promise.
It took me just about $640,000. Okay.
You're fortunate enough to know more about
that. Oh, I know.
Well, the only other thing is, if you haven't seen the drone video, we shot that, and that can be seen on the website. So I'm good now. I'm done.
We also showed that at Discovery on Parade.
Yeah, yes, I'm sure that was.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Excellent job. She's amazing. All stuff she's doing.
We are happy to have you.
We're blessed with good staff.
Yeah. She's not doing the really exciting stuff. She's doing stuff that's hard to get along with.
That's how I can do all the
read those personnel policies.
And the records retention and stuff. And she's doing a great job of that stuff, too. Update Bing, the lease.
Yes.
It's like a movie.
How much longer do we have to talk about Bing?
I paid to have the sign removed from the front of the building. I got tired of looking at it. It was $350. It was worth getting it off of there. I also, at the same time, decided it was time to get the Florida Department of Environmental Protection removed from the marquee sign in front of Collins. So now it just says Florida Department of Ag and Consumer Services. So okay. That's taken care of. They have removed most of their stuff. Kim Williams really stepped up. He hired folks to come over and get stuff out of there. Everything that was left that wasn't in the containers. Containers are gone. Most of the stuff is gone. But what we are left with are some hazardous materials. And I do need some direction on if you would like for me to go ahead and proceed with the removal of those materials. I can get quotes, but certainly there's nothing budgeted for that. So according to this purchasing policy, I need to get approval for that. But so, I guess I don't really even need you to approve it. I'll just tell you, I'm going to go get quotes. We'll talk to FSU about what they can do for us and what they might charge us to do that. But I think we're at a point we just need to get that stuff removed.
Do you have an inventory of what it is? Or that's part of what
that's part of what they would do is they would figure out what it is and how to get rid of it.
Yeah.
And we've got to do that before we can just take it to Leon County as material.
You can't. No.
You can't do that.
Matter of fact, I think that what Dean was doing is he was taking the quota limit every week.
That's a familiar dodge.
Yes, yeah. But he stopped doing that.
Yeah.
And there's flammables, there's caustics, there's all kinds of stuff in there I just don't want to mess with. So
it will end up being more expensive than we think it should be, but I think we need to get on with it.
Hopefully FSU will cut some deal.
That would be great. That'd be great.
So what's left is the grease equipment, as in what's being shipped to Greece. They're waiting on a shipping container. I spoke with Kim Williams. He says that they're waiting on that shipping container to get here. It's supposed to be here anytime, which I've been hearing that for a year. AMWAT has been contracted to handle the packing and shipping once the container gets here, because it's a lot of stuff. We're not talking a little bit of stuff, it's a lot of stuff. And Kim said he will stay on Dean to make sure that gets done as quickly as possible. And like I said, Kim's been a great help.
Yeah,
and then Kim is also going to, once the equipment going to Greece is removed, he's going to get those doors repaired, the ones that in the lab and outside lab where the grease equipment is stored. You can't fix it, obviously, until they get that big stuff out. And that's going to leave us with, there's a handful of office equipment and some other lab equipment that's still in there, where it's now ours, as far as I'm concerned. They've abandoned it.
Yeah.
And that agreement gave us the ability to dispose of things as we saw fit, so disposal may be us using it.
Yeah.
And some of it,
do we have a use for it?
Well, some of it's like the compressor equipment, compressor that's in there, it works. There's some couple of desks.
Desks and chairs? Do we have a new form?
Yeah, we will.
Okay.
Matter of fact, I can bring those over right now and put them in these offices and have those fully furnished, ready to go for people who want to come in. That's usually a problem. Mm-hmm. I got some old junk in here now. These are nice looking pieces. Okay, so that's been. On the EEP funding, we had an update today. There were standalone bills filed in the House, House Bill 3735. Senator Montford has also made sure that the request is in the proper posture in the Senate. This is from Gary Zarin, Kristen's assistant.
Mm-hmm.
The House and Senate budget chairs started to release budget proposals. The EEP request is not in the initial House budget. and the Senate's preliminary transportation, tourism, and economic development portion of their budget hasn't been released yet, which is apparently where our stuff will be. County staff tells us the request is still in play and will continue working to try to get it in the budget. So Jeff Sharkey's working on it. We've got Andy Johnson, who's the county's legislative liaison person. He's aware of it and working on it, so they have their attention. So that's all we can do.
Okay.
Just a comment about Senator Mofford. He's a little bit of a rare guy in terms of he's very, very well respected by his opponent, his opposing partner, House, Senate, party. And while we have him, and before he gets replaced by term limits, is there anything we want? Boy, he's the best advocate we have in the Senate right now.
Yep.
So I don't know what else we may think we might want, but while we've got him, we ought to move.
It's a great point, because if go back next year, be a little more ready, a little more prepared. The county should be used to, putting us in their list of things. But we have to get to the end of this year first.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
I think he had, one more year?
I don't know.
I don't remember. Yeah.
But anyhow, for the Republicans to appoint him as a committee chair was rare.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
We had a change in property managers. Mark Frost at first went into the real estate brokerage side, and he got his real estate license. He is now working for someone else. He's actually working for Summit Group. Just came up on LinkedIn. That's how I learned everything. Anyway, his replacement, Stephanie Choulet, has been a godsend. She's really, really working hard to clean up some old messes. We've restarted our monthly meetings. She actually keeps them. And don't get me wrong, Mark did a good job, but towards the end, he lost interest. And it showed.
Will she be attending?
Yes, she will be attending board meetings. We have revamped her report to the board. You should notice that it's a lot easier to read and just has pertinent information that we care about. It's not repetitive with other reports that we have, like the monthly financials and all that. She didn't care about that. So it's occupancy rates, just the occupancy rates in one place, not each building, and so you can actually understand and analyze what's going on. It's got past due receivables, which we did not have before, which they need to keep track of and stay up with. Mm-hmm. And then it's got any tenant issues and then any other stuff she wants to talk about. So I think you'll like it. It's trying to keep it at 2 pages and then just pertinent stuff.
So that the board can get a comfort level with her, should we ask her to do her first report verbally? After that, put them in a matter of...
Yeah, that's fine.
I just think it'd be good to see her in action.
Yeah, we'll see how much time we have.
You understand what I'm saying, Madam Chair?
I do.
Yep, and I will alert her to that.
Yeah.
She's cleaning up old messes, and she is even doing walkthroughs with contractors to make sure they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. So, for example, we didn't like the quality of what we're getting over it at the Don Fuquay complex in terms of the landscape maintenance. And they cut grass and they do that, but clearly there has not been a supervisor over here watching them do what they're supposed to be doing. So she's holding their feet to fire on the contract and says, you're not trimming these trees up above head height, and people are running into it. I mean, you can't go in front, you can't walk in the Collins building without hitting your head on a tree. And that's the front door. So they're working on that. I will be doing an RFP for the general counsel. Good thing she left. Sorry, Melissa. But as directed by the board, this contract is coming up on its third year. Time flies.
Well, that's fast.
Fun.
Yeah.
Sure.
So I will do a draft in April. I'm looking for executive committee approval in May, board approval in June 1st, and issue it July 5th, and then have something done in the hands of the board by October 5th. So, and with all, believe it or not, it takes all that time to get all that done.
Just a question there. Should we take the exception and bump the contract one more year before it goes to RFP?
It wouldn't break my heart. Let me tell you this, and for the record, she does an amazing job.
Yep.
Her rates are competitive. Actually, if I recall, she had the least, I think it was least expensive rates.
And
and responsive to you.
More importantly to that, that she is responsive, but also she does not, how did I say this with an attorney present?
Just say it. Two of them.
Okay. Oh, sorry.
We'll beat
you. Well, she doesn't bill. Okay. So, I mean, you get what you pay for. I'll put it
that
way.
Right.
And that has not always been the case.
Well, and that is not just a function of she's a good person. It is partly a function of that. It is also a function of the fact that she has many years of experience doing property transactions. Yeah. She knows what she's talking about. So it's not like, you know,
right.
you have to go and reinvent the wheel
right.
and figure out what the heck they're talking about. And so I would be delighted if we could let
Madam Chair, I would move that in light of pending issues in which counsel is currently active working on for us, that we waive the policy expectation for an RFP for a period of 12 months.
All right.
Can I rephrase that?
Yes, you can.
Yeah.
Can we just say that you direct the
executive director?
Executive director. Just thank you. I forgot.
Couldn't remember your title.
What's my name? The executive director to extend the general counsel's contract for 1 year.
Sure.
Because you have the authority to do that, and you don't have to waive the policy to do it.
Okay.
All right. So it doesn't need policy.
No.
And does this mean that... And
frankly, I'm not sure our policy... Yeah.
Do we not require board action then?
You will when I extend
when
the contract, when I actually
when
give the extension.
When you do the extension.
And I don't have to do the extension right away. That can go in June.
Well, and you will have to ask her too.
Well,
she's amenable.
Yes. And keeping rates the same and all of that.
Yeah.
So if she wants to change rates, then obviously we'll have to talk about that. But yeah, the contract's not up until end of September.
I understand.
I just have to, if I'm going to RFP it, I have a plan for that. So.
Well, thank you for saying that, Dave. I think that's a great idea.
I agree 100%.
And I think the idea that we have enough going on that she already knows about really argues in favor of the potential cost savings on it as well. Okay.
You know, I'll think about that. I think we may want to put on consent. Not too much of that. We'll talk about that on how we handle that. But.
Well, we don't really have to do anything on it until
the only thing
we
I'm concerned
talk to her.
Yeah,
see
right. I'll talk to her. Yeah. My only concern is if she says yes, and then we go ahead and put the extension together, and then we submit it.
Yeah.
To the board in
and
June, and then she said, and the board says no. Somebody on the board says no. I don't think some of the rest of the board votes to not extend it. Then I don't have time to do the RFP. So,
well, then that's really on you. How do you want to do it?
Yeah,
I don't have strong feelings.
I'll figure that out. Okay.
You don't think she'd say no to you?
No.
No, my only concern is that having to get waivers all the time. You know, sometimes have clients running into each other, but
yeah.
I don't have the sense that that's been a huge problem.
It's happened twice. And I don't know how Bron Cassell feels. I mean, she's now working for a different firm. I don't know how much control she has over all of that versus what the firm controls, but I don't know. We'll find out. National Park Service, just an update. I have been continuing in conversation with them. The latest was about 2 weeks ago. They met with their leadership team in Atlanta and their space coordinators. They briefed them on where things are at. They identified the remaining concerns that they have about moving forward the way it's structured. And their associate regional director for administration left the following Sunday for 3 weeks in D.C. and planned to meet with the National Park Service controller to work through those issues and gain a firm understanding of our options and process. Okay? Exactly. So, now I will tell you, Dave has done everything he can. The biggest challenge they have is that they did get approval, but there's a period of time that they have to cover out of their own budget before the next budget is issued. Okay? So, it's 2.5 times the number they thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So, they've got to get their own Park Service folks to work through, are they willing to cover that dollar amount out of their current budget okay, in order to pay for this thing to move forward. That's where that's at.
How much would the dollar amount be?
I don't know at this point. I don't know what they're talking about, but it must be enough to cause some heartburn. The FAMU Department of Entomology and the Morgan Building, Kristen met with Dr. Robinson to try to see if we could get this thing moving forward. He is enthusiastic and said he would help move it forward. That was on March 3rd. March 3rd, second or third. So we're about another month past that. Finally got an email yesterday from Dr. Kanga, who's the head of the department. And he is trying to get a meeting set up for the end of April, early May. And Kristen had conveyed to Dr. Robinson that we have an issue with NWRDC, who wants the space that we did a short-term deal with them that's got a 90-day out, I think. They want a longer-term deal. They don't want to be sitting here waiting to see what's going to happen, and they're coming up on 6 months of waiting.
Yeah.
So Kristen sent another email yesterday to Dr. Robinson to say, hey, remember this problem. We can't wait another 4 weeks. We've got to have an answer in a week or two.
Good.
So it was firmer but polite. Okay. So we'll see. We haven't seen the response. Like I said, that was just yesterday. And I got to figure out what to do with NWRDC. I think we're going to end up at the point where we're just going to have to say, we do the deal with NWRDC, you're going to either have to shrink the amount of space you get, or we're going to have to go do something else. But we'll see what Dr. Robinson says. It's just not fair to them to,
nope,
to keep them on the hook like this. We did just for the record, and according to policy, I have to notify you when I renew a lease. So I renewed these CBTR, the Center for Biomedical and Toxicological Research, for another year. And last but not least, I have signed up to join the ever controversial Chamber community trip.
Yeah, I wondered how long it would take for that to I really did.
You saw Duo Moore's, yeah. I just think it's important for me to be at those things, particularly when the focus is on entrepreneurship and higher ed.
Is it national or something?
It's a national. Yeah.
I'm not sure that the things themselves are important, just to be harsh about it. But I think your being there and being with those people is a different question.
It's working.
Well, right. And honestly, with what the things that have gone on with EDC, we really don't have a good connection with the chamber right now. And I think it is important that we keep that connection going. So I did go ahead and sign up for that. I already have my flights set up. The biggest challenge I have is that it is the last day of that is May 17th. As you may recall from a few minutes ago, that is also the day of our event, our elevator pitch night. So I got an early flight back. I'll skip the morning stuff, which is usually the arts stuff. And not that I have anything against the arts or bees. inside joke. anyway, my flight gets back at like 10:30 in the morning. So I'm leaving at, crack of dawn, and maybe not even that. And as long as there are no flight issues, I will be back in time for the 5:30 event. I have it set up. We've already gotten Larry Lynch committed to being the MC for the event. I will have all of them. I will have them cross-trained on everything they need to do in the event that I don't get back in time.
Yeah.
So it will be covered.
Well, you could just put Larry up there and push go. And
the problem is getting Larry to get it done.
It would be a stop.
Yeah, stop. Yeah, right. He doesn't have a stop.
He doesn't have a stop.
Okay. Another person, Larry, in case you're...
No. How many people do you suppose have said that to his face? Lots.
Yes. I have every chance I get.
How many people do you expect to be on the chamber trip?
I have no idea. I've heard a lot of no's.
Heard a lot of no's?
A lot of no's.
Huh.
Well, a few. For example, Kim Williams has agreed to be a judge for us. And my first question to him was, are you going on the trip? And he said no. So... need to keep reminding him of that, by the way, so he doesn't forget.
Yeah, I did get a confirmation that I got him.
Okay, but keep reminding him, May 17th.
Okay.
You need to send calendar appointments to all the judges for that date and time.
I can do that.
I concur, though, that is a great opportunity for you to continue your networking.
Okay.
And I'll support you being there.
We have, it's in my travel budget, you know, to be able to handle that stuff, so we're good.
I support you being there.
Thank you, I appreciate that. That's all I have.
All right. Well, that was both the report and new business.
Yes.
Okay. Or whatever. Does anybody have anything else? Concerns? Questions? Thank you all for being here. Y'all are reliable.